Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Travis, if you had asked me going into tonight what the one thing that by far I least wanted in the show closing angle about Jay making his decision, will he fall in line, is another swerve. And we got it. And I just rolled my eyes so hard. I mean, how many times are they going to do this? I hate that I have to criticize this because there's some great acting and all that. But another instance of something that's been going on way too often in pro wrestling in general and WWE, we're going to lead you down this road. And in this case, create a completely believable and logical scenario that seems to be leading towards Jay siding with Roman and Heyman. And then, out of nowhere, going against all the evidence that was just presented to Jay and all the arguments he made, he turns and super kicks Reigns. And, I mean, the crowd popped and they loved it and they're happy. But there's got to be another way to tell the story in wrestling without this. How did you react?
I reacted in a completely different way. I enjoyed it very much. Didn't mind the swervy aspect of it. It to me, it added. Jay was given like you said, given some evidence. Like, hey, this is what happened, and I think he saw it for what it was, like a slime bag trying to use true things. But oh, now you bring this up, Roman? How interesting. And you guys could have told me this any time in the last 3 years. But now that I'm trying to leave, oh, this is your little ace in the hole that's supposed to get me to turn on, you know, my womb pal over here. No, I liked it. I was, after it's showing off, I was pumped.
Yeah. Well, we're going to disagree on this one because sure. I just, how many times? I mean,
I'm not coming at it from that part. I didn't.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's eye-rolling in that it's not a surprise. It's become sort of predictable. Like, okay, you know, you're going to make this case and then completely go the other direction. And they've been doing it for years, and it's sort of the go-to thing to do. But I don't consider it surprising anymore. And, like, I just – to me, it was just too convincing. Jimmy's already – you know, I know what's best for you, Jay. You know, Jimmy – or Jay introducing the notion that he was, you know, prom king or whatever and Mr. Athlete of the Year and – you know, was always ahead of Jay in terms of all these accomplishments, and now here he is, you know, Reigns exposing
making the decisions. Yeah,
and Reigns is exposing. Heyman and Reigns exposing, and Jimmy acknowledging it. Honestly, yeah, I was against it, which implied he thought he should be the guy, not Jay, and it's totally believable. There was almost nothing that could make me believe. There's almost nothing that I think would justify Jay siding with Roman. All told, given what we know about Jay and how the Bloodline act and everything that's been going on and the manipulation of Heyman and all that, there's almost nothing that would make sense other than it's exposed and Jimmy confirms it. I mean, it was just like, oh, okay, I'm on board with this. Jay's going to side with Roman until, you know, something else happens. But this is actually a believable scenario for me, that would be enough for Jay to go, screw it, Jimmy. I'm tired of being in your shadow. I have a chance to not be in your shadow. I feel
well, that
more
wouldn't have rang very much true.
Yeah, well, and I feel like I'm tired of living in your shadow, so I have a chance to be the tribal chief. I'm going to go that way. Anyway, we can delve more into it. I don't want to dwell just on that aspect of it because there's obviously
One quick thing. I wish when he hit the older brother stuff and be like your brother Joshua, your big brother. I wish they would have acknowledged he would have like you were minutes. Ahead of me,
right.
maybe tens of minutes or hours. I guess it could. That's how birth works sometimes. Maybe Jay was the stubborn one and didn't want to leave. But because they hit the twin thing, and then people that have to go, wait, that don't know their story. I'm just thinking of someone who's just tuning into SmackDown for the first time. They heard some guy named Jay. Is he going to fall in line or not? Oh, I'm going to check this out. Wait, he said he's twins. Now he's saying he's my older brother. So I thought that was a bit weird, but a little nitpick there.
Yeah. I was interested, and this is the type of thing where you want to go back and rewatch it just to catch everybody's facial reactions. But when Roman first said who was against you being the heir apparent to the tribal chief, who was against Jay, who spoke up, Heyman's first reaction looked like nervous, like, don't throw me under the bus like this, tribal chief.
Don't make
and
me.
Then, yeah, and then, he turned and looked at Jimmy, and they said it was Jimmy, you know, and it rains. It wasn't you, Heyman, wise man. It was him. I didn't quite get that either. Like, normally I'm right on with the beats, the rhythm of everything and people's reactions. But I wasn't quite sure why Heyman was like, to me, Heyman's body language and facial expression was, you're throwing me under the bus here. Why are you doing that? And instead, I guess we're supposed to think Heyman's like, do you really want to go there? That's going too far. But I don't think Heyman's the type who would think, oh, it's too far to expose that Jimmy was against Jay when we suggested he would be a better heir apparent. Has some succession vibes to it. I mean, there's definitely succession vibes going on here with the idea being that one sibling is trying to undercut the other in their quest to become the successor to reign. So they're pulling from that. But I guess, I mean, in the end, why did Jay decide to put on this ruse for 3 minutes, yelling at his brother, making this compelling case? They started being in his shadow, and it was a betrayal for him to undercut it and never bring it up to him. Why? What was the point of the ruse other than good television and sleight of hand?
I mean, you answered your own question.
Well, no, maybe there's an answer. Sometimes I'm surprised. Like, is that a good angle when people are acting in a way where the only explanation is it made for a more dramatic swerve in the end, as opposed to this is how people would naturally act and the cameras just happen to be filming it. And that this is an example of that. There's swerves where it's like it's a heel taking the fans on a ride and going, ha-ha, tricked you. But that's not Jay's position, which makes it worse than most swerves. His position, he deceived the fans for no reason. Or the argument is, oh, he just wanted to lull Reigns and Heyman and Solo into thinking they got him and they didn't. I guess that would be the answer, right?
He's a twin who legit in that moment felt some kind of way, like the exposure. Like, I don't want to minimize the big reveal that Roman had, but I just think that in his heart he's probably like, well, I mean, of course. I mean, I probably would have said, hey, who we got? I'm thinking of Jimmy should be the right hand, you know, the heir apparent, whatever. And Jay would have probably been like, well, no, that should be me. I mean, besides that, I just think he was a brother that had to get some things off his chest. And in that moment, felt the need to tell his brother how he felt. But in the end, we both out.
Yeah,
like, I don't want to minimize the things he actually said to Jimmy. Like, those things are true. But, you know, we twins, and we're clearly being manipulated here. So,
yeah, but
and to lull them and do all the things that set them up for a bigger downfall, Roman and Solo, or Roman specifically.
I guess I just believe Jay's performance.
You should. He was telling the truth. He wasn't lying. He wasn't swerving the audience. And in that sense, and what he was saying was false. He really, and especially if they cover that in a promo next week or an interaction between Jay and Jimmy next week, where he's like telling them exactly what I'm saying. Like, I meant that stuff. Like, that hurt. Like, Roman saying that caught me off guard on TV like that, you know, but I'm glad you told the truth. Like, I'm glad I had to beat it out of you, and, you know, you ain't lied to me, to my face. But, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves, because we got a lot of people lining up on the phone lines to give their thoughts, and I am eager to hear them. A lot more happened on this show, although that Tag Team Gauntlet match was just one team after another doing a quick job, and then you had Styles and Meechan doing a quick job, and they tried to pack a lot into the show, and
they did.
A lot of things didn't have a chance to fully breathe. But there's, you know, certainly some good to talk about mixed in with all of that. So we will get to that as we progress here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, June 16th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter since 1987, and the website pwtorch.com since 1999, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows, which, starting tomorrow, includes the AEW Collision Post Show. And by the way, the ESPN story on CM Punk came out earlier today, so if you haven't heard that, I encourage you to check it out. We got some key summaries up on pwtorch.com, pulling out the most newsworthy aspects of it. And then I did a roughly a half-hour Wade Keller hotline, a focus on AEW edition, reading key quotes and providing insight in what the reaction that I've been able to garner from people in AEW, wrestlers and otherwise, was to the article, and trying to piece together kind of a timeline of the drama this week. That started Wednesday when some people got wind of what the topics and some things were that Punk was saying that the reporter was asking for comment on. So I have an in-depth report on that Wade Keller hotline for VIP members that got posted during SmackDown. I recorded it just beforehand after spending a good part of today on the phone and texting and messaging people to get insight on that. So if you're interested in that story and you're not VIP, go VIP to hear that right now. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Tomorrow on the Collision Post Show, Mike McMahon from the PW Torch Daily Cast joins me as co-host for the premiere episode, which will feature CM Punk in the main event if all goes as planned. I mean, he is an unpredictable person. It's been a volatile situation, but all indications are that nothing blew up in a way that's going to get in the way of that. So, yeah, join us tomorrow night for that. We'll take calls live afterwards, just like we do after Raw Dynamite and SmackDown tomorrow night. My co-host, the voice you've heard so far otherwise on the show, is Travis Bryant of the VIP podcast, the PW Torch East Coast Cast. Travis and Rich get together just about every week and cover a wide array of wrestling topics and otherwise. Travis, welcome.
Thanks for having me back, Wade.
Great having you. All right, so we have so many people lined up on the phone lines. We want to get to calls. You can get in line also if you're live streaming our show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. The phone number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and lets us know you want to be brought onto the show. The other approach you can take is email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get rolling with calls, and we'll begin with AJ in Virginia. AJ, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade, Travis, how are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Good to hear from you.
So I have to admit, I was in and out of the Bloodline story. There were times when they were riding high. There were times when they were riding low, but this episode, this ending just brought me right back in. And I have to say, in terms of Jay sort of pulling a ruse, like you said, Wade, I think this is very similar to what he did with Sammy when he first gave him that hug. And then a few seconds later, he switched it up. And I think that's really how his character has been defined and written. He's a very conflicted person internally. And he always wants to do the right thing, but I think there's a entertainment value there as well, right, in terms of giving that swerve at the end. I just think it was so satisfying the way he said, I'm out too, and then just kicked Roman. So I thought it was a very, very satisfying angle to the Bloodline story. And I have to say, Roman is a pretty amazing guy to give his cousins a pedestal to really step up at his own expense. You know, this show in particular, the way he took that dual super kick at the end and the way he sold it really shows you that he really wants his cousins, the Usos, to elevate, to take over, to be the ones who are going to run the show moving forward. So I walked away with a lot of credit and respect for Roman as a person who's really looking out for his family in that sense as well.
Roman is a top star who is in a position to have made so much money, be so successful, and probably has his eye on what comes next. And he happens to be working with family who he likes and loves. And Paul Heyman, who I think he greatly respects and gets along with. So he's just like, I don't want to say rare, but it is an exception to what is often the rule, which is a top guy protecting his spot and maybe not being as giving as Roman is. And I think that's worth saying. I'm not surprised it makes sense that he would be doing everything he could to give a rub to and pass along any kind of boost that he can. So that is, I think, worth noting. I do want to say that you saying you enjoy the ride and that this is, you know, what Jay does. Everything about this Bloodline storyline tonight was super well done. I mean, except for what I said. I didn't like this work because I still haven't wrapped my head around the notion that Jay would, for the entertainment of the fans, trick them into thinking he was going to turn and then not, or take Reigns and Heyman on a ride because of new information, apparently. Now, it could turn out, and I'm just kind of, you know, still working through this. We're doing this right after the show. It could turn out that Jay did know that Jimmy had done that, and Jimmy and Jay were acting, and that it's going to turn out that they actually, you know, I always wondered if that was going to get brought up, but if it did, they were going to pretend that they didn't know and play into it and give Reigns and Heyman a false sense of security before turning on them. That would satisfy me more. But again,
really?
I just
sure.
Yeah,
that would be weird.
Well, it's
yeah,
it's
we true. Were holding this thing in the reserve.
No, that Jimmy and Jay had already worked it out.
No,
know,
I know.
All.
It's yeah.
But my issue
and
is,
if it happens to come up on TV, we'll pretend. Like, that's even weirder than just going, you know, taking the bad guys on a bit of a ride. I don't know.
Go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead. Travis already ruined my momentum in my rant.
the one thing I give these guys a lot of credit for is post-WrestleMania, when Roman beat Cody and shocked the world, the press conference afterwards, I think it was after WrestleMania, you heard Triple H and Roman talk about how important it is to keep this storyline moving along. And Triple H actually admitted on the press conference, this is all I think about. You know, I go to sleep and I'm thinking, what do we do with this storyline? And as a fan, it's nice to hear that the leadership, the creative team, is obsessed with the storyline because they want to do right by the fans, and they really want to keep it going. I mean, when Sammy and KO were drafted to Raw, I thought, this is it. This is the end of this amazing segment that we had, and somehow these guys keep it going. And I have no idea where it's going to go. I don't know who is going to take Roman off that pedestal. I personally have always felt it has to be Jay. From 3 years ago, that's the guy who's going to do it. Now, when and how it happens, I have no idea, but I'm just all in. I'm super excited, and I love how the Usos are getting elevated the way they are.
And that is the overriding great aspect of this, is the Bloodline, as it disintegrates, I think was the word Cole used at the end of the show, it is just full of possibilities in terms of everybody getting a boost from it. You've still got Solo as this rising star who's going to be a major player within the Bloodline as the, you know, last remaining active wrestler next to Roman with Heyman, and you're going to have the Usos getting their chances to go after Roman in high profile and what should be just spectacular singles matches. Not spectacular because of the density of high spots and risky moves and dives, although there'll be some of those, but because of the way that they're going to make everything matter, and it's going to be what they do in between moves and the facial expressions and reacting to the storyline that has been built up for the past year plus. And telling that story through action, probably mostly inside the ropes. And in this investment that fans have in seeing what happens because of the way that this has been built up, is giving the wrestlers involved an opportunity to take the storytelling of a wrestling match and add layers to it that just normally don't exist because of the history of these characters and the journey that we've been on. And I mean, this isn't just working because we like it and we watch it and we rave about it, which is the vast majority of what I do with Bloodline segments. It's also just like drawing money. I mean, tonight was the biggest grossing event in the history of that city for WWE. And that's been the rule, not the exception for WWE. It's the Bloodline who are, who clearly are the reason this is drawing. And I will say, as much as I'm like sitting here trying to reconcile another swerve and rolling my eyes, and they go to that well too often, if they hadn't done it, before so often, then this would have worked better. I'd still have my issue with why did they take us on that ride? What did Jay accomplish? And I'd hope they'd address it later, like you said. But that aside, this is, AJ, setting up so many cool things going forward. And they have found a way to breathe life into this. Go ahead, AJ. Yeah.
Oh, no, I agree with you all the way, Wade. It's exciting. I don't know what's going to happen. I always suspected in order for Roman to lose, he can't have the Usos by his side. So at some level, the Bloodline has to break up in order for Roman to be more vulnerable to lose the title. And that's why in my head, him beating Cody made sense because the Usos were with him. Even though there was friction, they were still by his side. So he's going to lose that title when the Usos are not by his side. I just don't know who that worthy opponent is going to be, but it's super exciting to watch.
Travis, can you rule out that Jimmy or Jay end his reign? Or do you think, and even more important than your opinion, and no offense to your opinion, but do you think the fan base is going to buy in that Jimmy and Jay are, anytime they face him, are actually candidates to end the reign? Are they telling the story of Jimmy and Jay enough where that seems believable and they're not just fall guys for eventually Cody or whomever?
No, I think the fact that Jay being the one to take Roman down eventually thing is getting a bit of some steam says that that's the case, not the case. I don't know how you framed it, but I think the fans, I think they'll be fine. Cause I think getting there, by the time we get there, it's going to be what we want. That's like that little bit. So whether that's SummerSlam,
there's one thing Jay's missing.
Whatever.
Yeah. There's one thing Jay's missing in my opinion, in order to beat Roman and even get the crowd behind him, a finisher. There's no way you can beat Roman with a dozen super kicks. He's got to branch out a little bit. He's got to build a repertoire, a profile for himself where the fans get behind him, like Seth Rollins stomp, Roman spear, whatever it is. He's got to have an impactful move in his arsenal to be able to stand out and to further separate himself from Jimmy a little bit as well.
Interesting. What do you think of that, Travis, having a more distinctive signature finisher?
Yeah, because I was going to say, well, he's got the splash, but that's like sure, they can hit it as a singles, but that's, typically for them been there, whether they're hitting the same person with it or two guys are down at the same time and they're hitting individual splashes, that's kind of been their thing as a team. So it wouldn't make the point for the caller here who thinks he should be a little bit more individual, which is probably true. Now that I think about it, it's something that's probably going to be a sign. Like if all of a sudden this summer Jay starts getting over again, a new finisher or a hold or something like that, I think that's going to be a sign and signal like, oh, okay, they're taking this seriously. They agree with the caller here.
AJ, anything else quick you want to add? I want to keep the pace going here so we can get to
everybody. Yeah. Sure thing. One item unrelated to SmackDown. So this is a Seth Rollins opinion. I've been the biggest Seth Rollins fan from the very beginning when he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D., when he branched out, did his own thing. This latest run with him getting a title has just been so weak. and so disappointing. And I've really wanted to get behind this character. It's a flawed character. Sure, people like to sing along your song, but that doesn't mean you give someone a title. And I get it. He's been probably the most reliable workhorse in the company, right? He's done everything they've asked him to do. But I'm sorry, if there's not a compelling story behind you, especially if you have something as great as Bloodline, I don't think that justifies you having a title and just running with it. So I've been disappointed with his character and the fact that they created a new title, which I think diminishes the amazing work that Gunther has done on the IC title. So just wanted to share that. Thanks again for taking my call. You guys are awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, AJ. Appreciate that. I will save further comment on that for a show when we're not don't have so much on SmackDown to talk about. But it is relevant in the sense that WWE now has two major world singles men's titles, and certainly Seth's presentation is polarizing and arguably not worth it, because it diminishes what Jay and Jimmy are going to be fighting for that Roman has, because there isn't just one undisputed Universal Champion. But I think I think ultimately the Bloodline storyline will be just fine, because it is based, I think, so much on great acting and interactions with a faction where people are invested in the nuances and layers of each character and each character's relationship to each other, and it can withstand the championship that is at stake ultimately. It can withstand that being watered down a bit. And frankly, what they're fighting over too is the succession following Reigns and who becomes tribal chief. And it's actually less about the title than it could be. And that probably is a strategic choice, or just the logical thing to do given the structure of the Bloodline. All right, let's go to Scott in Tampa, Florida. I promised him he'd be next. He's on the VIP Express line. Scott, welcome. What are your thoughts on SmackDown?
Hey, guys. I thought tonight was a good Charlotte show. It's been a while since I've called in. How are you doing tonight, Wade and Trav? I have to push back against you, Wade, again, with the ending segment there. You know, I agree with Travis. I don't think that Jay was faking his emotions with, you know, when, you know, what he was calling out Jimmy and you know, Jimmy admitted that, yeah, you know, he doubted him. I think that, you know, if I were to take the acting and the story as it played out tonight, I think Jimmy and Jay had a plan they were going to work Heyman and Reigns in some type of way, but, you know, when Roman dropped that nugget on Jay, kind of, you know, maybe change the story a little bit, or to change the direction that Jimmy thought that Jay was going to go. And he might've been thinking like, oh crap, like, man, I thought we were tight, but he's not going to forgive me about this. But, you know, lo and behold, he stuck to his guns, because, you know, I think if they follow up with the story and, you know, after a match, you know, a tag match against Reigns and Solo, you know, maybe you address it with Jimmy, like, hey, he still doesn't like that. And then Jimmy just, you know, apologizes more for, but Jay chose the decision to put this to the side for now. We have bigger things to take care of. Let me take care of Roman Reigns, and, you know, and we'll get back to this later. And so I think that's the way they go. Now, if they don't ever bring it up, yeah, then I'll look back at it and say, well, this is stupid. What was the point of it? But I thought the acting between everyone in the ring tonight, I mean, his Bloodline storyline is amazing. You know, I can't wait to see where they go with it next. I can see, you know, after Money in the Bank, a tag match against, you know, the Usos versus Reigns and Solo. But come SummerSlam, you know, that's when we'll probably get that one-on-one match against Reigns, yeah. You know, Jay against Reigns. But I'm going to pivot a little bit, because we've talked about that a lot. I don't think that Jay is the guy to take down Roman. I think that he's, you know, to me at least, I just view him as a tag team wrestler still. And unfortunately, I see that he can have spots in the main event, but I don't feel like he's stepped up that much. I haven't seen that much from him. You know, I know it'll make sense for the storyline if he took down Reigns, but I think overall of you know, what Reigns has put in the last 3 years, I just don't think Jay is the guy to take the title from him. What's your thoughts?
Man, what else could he – what else he got to give? I mean, this guy's been phenomenal. on TV for the last 3 years in various ways. We know he puts, you know, he can put on a banger. I mean, we've seen plenty of evidence in the ring. I don't know what else he could give you. So, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Well, Scott, Travis asked it perhaps rhetorically, but answer it. What specifically would you advise WWE to do to convince you condition you to see Jay Moore in a singles world champion threat to Roman Way?
I guess I could, think about that and kind of like run it through my mind. I thought the same thing about Jeff Hardy, you know, back in the early, you know, mid 2000s, and then I was wrong, right? Because he didn't end up having a good, you know, run at the main event scene. So, you know, perhaps Jake, you know, can do that. Maybe after Roman, you know, if after this storyline, after Roman drops, and said maybe, you know, Cody, you know, and Jake can have a storyline, you know, with someone else in the main event for the title. I just don't think that he's a guy to take Roman down and then just take the spot from Roman. Like, it has to be maybe a bridge. Someone has to be in between. And then, yeah, he can, you know, occupy that space. But I just think that with the equity that they put into this Roman Reigns character and being a champion for over 1,000 days and for 3 years being undefeated, it's like, I think it has to be a strong, like maybe a proven or a semi-proven main eventer to take that title from Reigns. And then perhaps Jay can, you know, then be involved in a title ring picture. I just don't think it's a good story outcome for Jay to beat Roman for the title. That's just my opinion on that. But perhaps, can he be in a main event scene? Yes. Or being a world champion, I can see that, but not taking it from Reigns. I guess that's if I were to clarify it.
Sure. Yep. Scott, anything else you want to add to things that occurred tonight?
Yeah, I'm gonna pivot to Bianca Belair. In the Charlotte segment tonight, I thought, you know, Bianca, the last couple of weeks, she's showing a different range in her character. You know, I agree with almost everyone who called in and your opinion about her over the last year and how the character has helped King sell a little bit into teenage-ish. I mean, I still didn't like their skipping to the ring tonight. Kind of felt, I'm like, okay, why are you still doing that? I mean, you're upset last week. You're upset, rightfully so, I think, of Charlotte just coming in, taking your spot. But, you know, I felt that in the ring, she had confidence, that promo with Charlotte. It seems like the fans were more on Bianca's side. And I know there's some folks clamoring for her to turn heel, but I don't think she necessarily needs to turn heel. I think her character just needs more of a shift. And I think that tonight showed that. So, you know, what do you guys think about that?
Travis, you come out of that first.
Yeah, I thought the her response and her confrontation with Charlotte went very well. She said all the things that need to be said. Was very, in my book, a bit tame on the going away and run. You know, she framed it as she ran away scared after WrestleMania, or however she put it. That was like her first. She came back after like 6 months before that. Like, she showed up and beat Ronda in that quick thing and got the title and went on to WrestleMania and then turned around and left for 3 more months. But she didn't point all that out. She just, yeah. She said the things that needed to be said. I've turned into a Charlotte hater. The last couple of years I haven't been a big fan, but I wouldn't say I hated Charlotte. I was teetering lately, or the last few months, last year or so. And now I'm in the full I hate Charlotte Flair territory. And so Bianca going out there saying all the things that needed to be said, I wanted her to go further, but she didn't. But it was fine.
Yeah, I liked Belair last week. It felt like she was more like, I liked a lot what they did with her last week. It felt like she had dropped some of the gimmicky stuff that she's leaned on for a long time, including predating being a babyface in the main roster and things she did to get heel heat in NXT. As I said, I thought last week it just seemed like a real person, like the closest we've seen to the charismatic mega star that you just exudes when she's not in this, you know, sort of cartoonish narrow lane character that they have her playing that appeals to young girls in a successful way. But I think for her to be the biggest star she can be, branching out from that is good, and you know, some of that is the skip into the ring thing and all that. I thought last week was better than this week. I thought this week was still good, and I think it benefits her to confront Charlotte and call her out. And you know, the intrigue of Belair being at ringside for Charlotte Asuka in a couple of weeks, they've done a nice job building that up. I mean, just in a generic sense, WWE's doing a better job at looking a few weeks ahead and planting seeds for those things. And that feels like, even with all of the Vince McMahon interference after his return and, you know, just meddling and getting in the way of things or steering things in a new direction, he's not stopping Paul Levesque from plotting things out with his writing team 3-4 weeks ahead of time in ways we haven't seen. And we're seeing, you know, oh, next week on SmackDown, and then the following week on SmackDown, and 3 weeks from now on SmackDown. We're seeing more of that on Raw and SmackDown. And I like that. It feels less on the fly in this Bianca, Charlotte, Asuka storyline benefits from that. You can see that they have you have belief based on what you're seeing that there's an endpoint in mind, and they march their way backwards, and now they're going to tell a story to get us there. And I'm fine with Charlotte. I the problem with her has always been how are we supposed to feel about her? You know, I mean, she's constantly giving off mixed signals. And I think what they have the role that they have her in now is sort of almost resigning themselves to the idea that she's not going to be a clear cut heel or face. She's just going to be now treated as the veteran legend, almost patriarch of the division, the most, you know, arguably the most successful of the big call-ups from NXT. Becky might take issue with that, as would many fans, but that's her character. Her character plays that role, that she's the queen, she's the most accomplished champion, and she's not pandering for cheers. She's also not using cheap methods to get heat. She just is Charlotte. Charlotte Flair, the most accomplished female wrestler of this generation, and then letting everyone just kind of play off of her. And so doesn't seem like Belair is leaning heel in any way or giving any hints of that. And so I suspect we'll see Belair Charlotte in a big match, and Charlotte will be positioned to be booed, but she won't be doing it by kicking the ropes and insulting the city that she's in and insulting local sports teams. She'll just be herself, and that's going to rub people the wrong way. And I think that's a good use of her at this point. But I can also see at some point a heel coming along and Charlotte doesn't change, and she just acts sure of herself, but fans dislike the heel more than they dislike her in that context.
You had to appreciate Bianca saying, "I didn't need to do it 14 times."
And Charlotte had the right comeback, which is I dust myself off and get up each time. I've done it 14 times. But yes, you're right. I love that, because the number of title reigns you have is not
it becomes absurd. It's absurd.
Yeah,
it's Edge being the 11-time champion in like 2009 or 10 or whenever he won his last title. And you realize he won his first one in 05, and you go, that's ridiculous. Like, how does it? And then she's, you know, even more egregious with the 14 in, you know, 7 years or whatever it's been.
There should be a law that everyone agrees to, that when you talk about how many times you've been champion, you are obligated, or somebody will add a graphic on the screen that says this is the average length of your title reign, of each title reign, and how it compares to other champions who have held the title a near equivalent number of days. Charlotte held 14 times for an average of 3.5 minutes each. And that compares to Becky Lynch and Wendy Richter in this way. Like, put the damn stuff in perspective. I know they're not going to do it. They just, you know, use these stats conveniently to tell their story. But I would be satisfied with the pop-up video approach to undercutting such bragging.
Yeah, I think the stupid brand split and the multiple titles, you know, that they stuck with the last 20 years have, you know, really contributed to that. But that's a rant for another day. One thing you brought up, Wade, and I'll have another point on Bianca, but I do see, you know, the Vince McMahon and sports entertainment crap mixed with Paul Levesque, you know, creative wrestling storylines. I think the mix is kind of working well for me. We still have some of the traditional what we've come to expect from WWE, but, you know, with the new flair of Paul's storylines and you know, planning out shows weeks in advance. That, you know, I feel like they're in a really good groove with that. But, what's your – the one last thing I need, because I know you guys got to go, and a bunch of callers on the line, but do you guys think that Bianca should turn heel, or is this, you know, fine, you know, just have her have a shift, you know, a shift in her character? Because I agree with Charlotte's character right now, and, you know, and what you described it as, you know, she's just kind of that tweener role, and, it, you know, you may boo against who she – depends on who she's facing, and, you know, she'll be in special matches. But Bianca, you know, I think she should still be the baby face, but just have more of an edge to her. Do you think she needs to turn heel, or just be switching the edge and just be more edgy and be more grown up is the way to go?
Yeah, so need is a strong word. I think 2-3 years from now, if she has a run as a heel, she probably grow as a performer and be a stronger baby face as a result of it, similar to not parallel in every way, but similar to Roman Reigns. When he turns babyface and finally turns on Heyman, that's going to be a huge moment, and he's going to be a much better babyface having had a run as a heel. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But it's not, like, unsalvageable if she doesn't go heel for a while first, because I think there are some obvious tweaks you can do to her character, and one of them is what we saw last week with her and what we see in media interviews and more casual Q&As with her. It's you know, dial down the affected talking and the gimmicky phrase that she leans on, and, yes, skipping and twirling and smiling. I mean, if your only goal is to be able to, you know, primarily 8 to 12-year-old girls and you can sell enough merchandise, that's fine, but that's not a centerpiece main event act. And I think she can be more than that. So, I mean, I think it's tweakable.
I think Wade missed wrestling from 2006 to 2014.
I definitely didn't. I was wrong for all that. But explain yourself, Travis, and then what are your
thoughts? I was just talking about John Cena when you say can't be a main big time draw, or whatever, however you just phrased it.
Oh, if you just appeal to 8 to 12 year old girls?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think Cena appealed to more than that, but I think it was like 7 to 14 year old boys and girls. But go ahead, Travis.
No,
I
don't think she needs to turn heel. No, probably not. And I don't think there's a big lack of heels on the women's side. I think they have a good mix, so it's not an issue there. Yeah, it just doesn't feel. If they came up with something compelling enough and she did, then, you know, sure. But I don't think need or even anything leaning that way.
But is your vote still like things are going great and the way that she's portrayed is the best way to portray her and everything is fine and like you don't need to tweak anything? Are you kind of in that spot or do you think? Well
I don't know. I just disagree that how you framed her thing. How you know she's the skipping like that was just kind of her thing and that was. Not a big deal, but sure, context is everything. Like somebody said earlier, maybe it was this call, like coming down in that situation where you've got a bone to pick.
Yeah,
probably not the best time.
Yeah,
maybe at the top of the ramp you do your twirl, but coming down the ramp, like maybe have like a serious walk, like to establish. Okay, I'm coming down to have a conversation, and this means this is business. And now that I think about it, this has been the Charlotte and Bianca completely took. I forgot this was a Grayson Waller segment.
Yeah, I know.
very quickly shoved to the background, and which is fine. And he has silly little facial, you know. Faces in the background.
It's fine, but it's not fine because I think that's another talking point from the show is why have Grayson Waller, the Grayson Waller effect, if his goal, or not his goal, if his role is sit there and introduce something, ask one question, and then be interrupted and just be in the background forever. I mean, it happens with Tony Schiavone all the time in AEW. It happens to WWE interviewers. But, like, I think there should be an established baseline of ongoing interaction with him that I don't think has been established. Well,
I think this is, what, the fourth Grayson Waller effect, and everyone has been him asking questions and being, you know, as much as a focal as an interviewer is in that segment. And this one was set up the segment before or two before with Bianca saying, hey, I tried to play nice and do things your way. I'm going to do them my way. So it was set up. You knew she was going to come out, or you were at least weren't surprised when it happened. So I think because this is the fourth or so one, and this is the first one where he got interrupted and kind of steamrolled by his guest and an interrupter, that's just typically how those things go.
Yeah, I think the issue is he was brought in, and other than a vignette, all we've seen is a ring announcer making a big deal out of him, and then sitting at a table with a crawler on the screen, and we didn't get to know him on SmackDown as a distinct personality before he ended up just being wallpaper for wrestlers. Just like even the earlier ones, the criticism was Waller's not getting his personality in there enough, and this is the most egregious example of it. But it's not like it's that. I don't think that there's enough of a baseline of people understanding who he is and what he's all about where it's a draw yet. And so too quickly they've just gone into a zone of, there's not a lot that he's adding to the segments other than, you know, a couple facial expressions. So he's felt too much like wallpaper coming into this week and very much was discarded early on this one. Scott, thank you. Any quick closing words?
No, but here's more. Thank you. I think my call tonight. It's always fun talking to you guys about wrestling, and it's been a while with work and stuff. But anyways, you guys have a great night, and take care. We'll talk next time.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. Good to hear from you again. All right, up next we'll go to Jeremy in Columbus, Ohio. Jeremy, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, I kind of wanted to go back to it. I don't want to dwell because I know you guys have been talking about it a lot, but
yeah.
I do think Belair, heel turn would freshen up her character a lot. The idea has been floated out there that a heel turn with her and the Street Profits, and I think that'd be very, entertaining, sports entertaining. What do you guys think about that idea?
Hey, I'll add to it, Travis. I'll throw to you. What did you think about the Street Profits losing so quickly in that match?
Man.
Dawkins taking the fall. And I mean, I know it's I said last week when they announced the Gauntlet match, I said this is not my favorite gimmick because there's credible teams that lose too quickly in order to shove a bunch of teams on TV in rapid fire fashion. This was about as bad as it's ever been. I don't have the stats in front of me. But, man, I don't remember a gauntlet ever having this much major teams rapid fire losing inexplicably quickly. Because, again, I'll go back to the Jay thing and what was his reason for taking people on a gotcha, tricked ya ride like heels do? Well, what is the explanation about the format of the match that would explain kind of like two out of three fall matches where the first fall happens quickly? There's nothing different about the circumstances. It doesn't make logical sense that the Profits would lose quickly because they haven't been wrestling long enough where it makes sense they would lose quickly to anyone. So, Travis, your thoughts.
They will get the amazing, career-defining gauntlet matches once in a while, the Kofi Kingston one. There's been two or three in the last 8 years or so that have just – Seth Rollins was a part of one that was pretty amazing. But – what are those? All those gauntlet matches have? It wasn't one of seven matches on a two-hour show. It was one of three, maybe four, because it took up 40 minutes and possibly more. I know that Kofi Kingston one of those went, the entire, second or third hour, whatever show it was on. It was. I'm glad Pretty Deadly things turned out the way they did for them. That was pretty – I was fine with that. It was some good stuff. I like those guys. But to get there, it was tough. It was tough for the Good Brothers, everybody. Again, those gauntlet matches only work if you give – you got to have five matches in one. And they're just like, no, we're just going to have a standard time-wise. A couple segments, maybe two commercial breaks, but it deserves more than that if you want it to be anything worth And it's worse with tag teams, too, because you just got even more people. So theoretically, it should take even longer. And not to be, watching their clocks. But it's hard not to think about it when you're like, oh, damn, that whole thing took 15 minutes or whatever it went.
Yeah. And if the structure is the first two teams have a regular length match, at least 8 minutes, even that's on the low end. But ideally go to break, you come back, and then there's a finish, and you had all the wrestlers at ringside too. So you could have done distraction finishes to excuse an earlier pinfall too, which they didn't do, interference or something. They had the tools at ringside to do it. I'm not for interference in matches, but if you're going to have the Street Profits lose in 3 minutes or less, maybe protect them with some overt interference that justifies it or explains it. But the first match should be the longest, and then arguably the second one with the winners of the first match should be shorter because the people who won are tired and they lose, or the new opponents are heels and they're cocky because they think they're fresh and they lower their guard. They underestimate their opponents. There's stories you can tell that explain why future falls are shorter, but they didn't do that. They made the first fall short. The structure of the show was, we only have this many minutes and we want Pretty Deadly to have a chance to showcase themselves before they win. So we'll give them, 8 minutes or whatever they gave them. But everybody else is super rapid fire, and especially the Street Profits. Now, if it's part of a storyline where like Ford is like, Dawkins is letting me down and he's not, I don't want to be seen as a loser and he's become a loser and it's part of a heel turn for him. I mean, okay, if it's part of a storyline, fine. If it's not, then I can't give my stamp of approval to it. The opposite of that. All right, let's go back to Jeremy. Go ahead, Jeremy. Any follow-up?
Yeah, I thought it was funny how quickly Hit Row got eliminated. I got to chuckle.
That I'm not surprised by.
Yeah.
They are on the watch list for future endeavored people, or at least Top Dollar is. My God. You slip once, your foot hits the rope once, and you're done. And now we're going to make fun of you and job you out for a year.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, he's not Titus O'Neil and super personable. He can come back
right.
From, that's now, that's just a highlight of his career, not a, sign of worse things to come.
Exactly. Yep. All right, cool. Jeremy, anything else quick?
The last thing I want to bring up is, so I used to watch NXT a little bit before the 2.0 revamp or whatever. And I remember Grimes as, he was like the hillbilly with he had a distinct look. He had a hat and a vest and chest hair and, the voice and everything. And it's just on the main roster, he's just, just this guy. He doesn't have any personality, or a character to him. I kind of understand why they don't want to, go back to that. But I feel like, he needs something because, the cave-in, that's a great move. But I don't think he's that flashy of a wrestler to rely on that. I thought he needed that, the to-the-moon guy. You know what I mean?
Ugh. God, I'm so glad he got rid of that hat. And I'd be so even happier if he stopped saying to the moon.
Yeah.
It's the absolute dirt worst catchphrase and delivery of a stupid ass catchphrase I've seen. I don't know what I hated more, the hat or the catchphrase. Probably the catchphrase, for sure.
Is there a third option, Travis, that is better than what Jeremy is complaining about, which is this sort of undefined character at this point?
Yeah, just give him a bit of time. He's been on the roster 6 weeks.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of thought that's been put into what his character is in these early weeks, and that's when you make that first impression and establish who you are.
For sure.
We know who Pretty Deadly are. We know who LA Knight was when he debuted instantly.
Yeah.
Cameron Grimes is this smiling guy who looks like he's on his way to church and has shiny white teeth and pearly blue eyes and a nice smile, and he's a good kid. Like, that's not a character. That's like, the guy next door that you want your, kid to marry or something. I don't know. I don't know what his character is. I don't know what defines him at all. There's nothing that they've done to establish, anything that anybody knows about him who wasn't watching NXT. And if you were watching NXT, He's not like the cocky, ultra rich, came into money guy. He's not the hillbilly. There's just like, I'm just like, he's super talented, but what is Cameron Grimes? I mean, this is pro wrestling. You know, you got to have something. Right, Jeremy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if he doesn't have to go back to the hillbilly guy, but I don't know. I thought that was just, you know, it's something. And they just introduced him. They didn't even, like, mention, like, oh, he, you know, he used to be a hillbilly, but now he's, you know, they didn't explain anything. It's kind of like AEW in that way. You know what I mean?
Once a hillbilly, always a hillbilly.
How do you explain that? Like, why did his whole personality change? Like, did he, you know, you don't want to go isolate or ostracize in a whole segment of, you know, your hillbilly fan base. I mean, that's a huge block of folks you don't want to go pissing off. But no, he definitely needs something. I will agree. I'm just... Oh boy. So it's been thundering and lightning here, and the lights are now flickering. So if I cut out, that's I didn't hang up on you.
Well, good. I'm glad you let me know that because, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you decided to hang up on me voluntarily. So I'm glad that I know it's likely the weather. Yeah, this is pro wrestling. You don't need to explain everything that's different or been dropped, but you got to have something to replace whatever you're doing. And this is, I mean, you know,
I mean,
at least he's not
pressing. A thread of why something's not, you don't have to be over explain it, but if there's like a thread people can look back to and at least explain it in their own heads. Like,
I think that's all we're asking.
Some people ask for it, really.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans especially.
Yeah.
You don't need a lot.
Jeremy, anything else before we move on?
No, that's about it. Thanks for taking my call.
Cool. Good to hear from you. Yeah, thanks for calling. Call again. All right, we'll go next to LaMarcus in Washington, D.C. LaMarcus, welcome. What's your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Trev. I'll just start off with what you said about the bloodline stuff. The way Jay was acting, it was like you said, Wade, it was kind of like all over the place in the middle of stuff. But we started talking about, you know, like you're the homecoming king or prom king or whatever. There's stuff like I'm like, is it looking like, huh? Like, where are we going with this? But I guess in a way it's kind of forgiving for the payoff because it was like, I mean, because I did like react to that. I kind of like sort of like almost like rocking back and forth like, oh my God. Because, and also with that, you're saying it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, why would he like sort of drag the fans on with this? And I'm wondering if – I'm not sure if Jimmy knew, but remember backstage, Sammy smiled at him, so I'm assuming he talked to Sammy, and Sammy knew. So maybe it was more of a way to sort of lure Roman into a false sense of security.
Yeah, I thought Sammy's look at Jay was really interesting because what it said to me, and I'm curious what you thought, Travis, is you got this. I'm confident but not sure, but I'm certainly hopeful that you're going to do the right thing. And look me in the eye, and I'm looking you in the eye, and I know who you are, and I know the decision you should make, and I'm pretty sure you're going to make the right decision. I think Sammy said all of that in like 3 seconds of looking at him on TV. Travis, how about you? Travis, how about you?
He said his power might go out.
Yeah, his power might have gone out if his lights were flickering. It says he's still on here, so I don't know what's going on. I mean, I kind of do. Maybe he dropped off. Travis, do you hear us and you're muted? All right. Well, I won't get Travis's opinion then. So LaMarcus, what do you think of my framing of that?
Well, yeah, that makes sense also. I guess I probably think too deep into it, but no. But that also makes it. I'm just trying to rationalize why they went about the way that they went through that promo. Cause even when Roman came out, I was like, either this is gonna be a very long segment, or because I think like, what is the main event? You know, because I don't remember or catch what the main event is unless it's like explicitly said. And I thought about like, what is the main event? Like, what's the main event match? So I wasn't sure if it was gonna be. For a promo, talking statement or not. So So I guess I'm just trying to rationalize why it's kind of all over the place.
Especially when the bloodline, like the last match ends, and there's like 25 minutes left in the show or something. It was like, they're not going to talk for 25 minutes, but you know, you forget about the long bloodline ring entrance and then, you know, Usto ring entrance and a commercial break to spread things out. And then the fact that SmackDown ends like 3 minutes before the hour. So there's local breaks before the local Fox affiliate news. There's all these reasons like, you know, the last segment's going to start then. But yeah, I mean, they pushed Jay. Well, you know, will Jay fall in line? Will Jay fall in line? I didn't like the framing of that, by the way. Well, I don't think Cole should be going, will Jay fall in line?
Yeah,
but like, why is
the interviewer saying it?
But the framing of will Jay fall in line implies that falling in line is what I think the phrasing of that and the tone of it is like, that's what he should do, but will he? And like, to me, I like the idea better, you know, will Jay... It would be equally biased to go, will he succumb to Reigns' manipulation? But it's like saying, will he fall in line is like the opposite of that. And I think it should be more neutral. What will Jay's decision be? Yeah. Who will he choose?
You don't want the show for like explicitly tipping the scale or what he should or shouldn't do. But I feel like with the promo, so there's also with the kind of Bianca Belair, because I mean, I thought it was a good promo. Well, at least I thought it ended strong, because for a while, at least maybe in the middle, I was kind of like, I mean, she wasn't as, you know, as kind of, I won't say as bad as she usually is, but it was, I mean, it was better, but it did get better at the end, and I do like her intensity at the end. And I believe Charlotte is, I mean, obviously Charlotte is a natural heel, so it's always weird that they try to portray her as a face. And I don't know what, I mean, I don't really care what you say, but Travis said that he doesn't like Charlotte, or he hates Charlotte, or he'd rather like not like her. But I'll say like his current kind of Charlotte
can't stand her.
Iteration.
you got to stop saying bad things, Marcus, he's back, so careful what you say.
Like with this iteration of Charlotte, I'm annoyed by her, but also amused, because I feel like she's pretty much the McBruffin, like the plot device, because she's pretty much like the plot device for the women's division, at least on SmackDown, because I mean the last time she showed up, she won the championship from Ronda Rousey her first night, and even when she showed up, I knew what was happening. I kind of had that McMahon like evil grin, because I knew that she was about to take the title off of Ronda, like just coming back like that. So I guess I'm like with that, I'm just kind of like that amused, but annoyed at the same time.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny to me. And also with the Street Profits, did you notice that when Dolphins was pinned, Taz was outside the ring, he was kind of like staring at Dawkins, like, and it wasn't like a look of concern, it's kind of like a, I mean, he wasn't mad, but it was like, kind of like, a look kind of like, I can't believe, like, you kind of lost kind of thing. I feel like they've been kind of doing stuff with Taz, like, even, I don't know if you remember the Elimination Chamber this year, when he was in it, he was making all those pinfalls, and all his pins were team assisted. Well, not team, but like it was assisted pins. So he wasn't like pinning people like by himself. Like he like someone like a opponent would be on somebody's shoulders, and he would probably like clotheslining them or something. So all his elimination was with an assist. But at the same time, he was also eliminated, I think, with like by two people. So I feel like they've been trying to tell a story of like kind of like tag team was holding him down, but they really haven't pulled the trigger yet.
What do you think of the journey that they've been on? And are you seeing some of the things LaMarcus is? And what is your hunch on where they're heading with this, if anywhere, or they're just losers?
I was convinced when the draft happened and they didn't split anyone, and specifically the Street Profits, like, oh, this is going to go on for a while now. So to seeds now for something that'll pay off in a year. But
it comes across as a storyline, Travis, where they've changed their mind a few times on what they want to do and the pacing of it. Do you agree with that?
I can't agree or disagree because I haven't noticed. So I guess
okay.
I
fair enough. Yep.
Naturally disagree.
Then yeah. No, you can just say you don't agree. Or that's better. You don't have to just disagree arbitrarily with me. No, that's fair.
I know, but
LaMarcus, what else?
Bobby Lashley. Do you think he's going to come back with MVP? Because I've been sort of waiting on. Because you remember, well, leading up to WrestleMania, you know, MVP tried to, you know, manage him again. So he gave him a WrestleMania card for a main event or something. And he never made it to WrestleMania, but MVP got Omos on the WrestleMania card. So I've been wondering if they're going to, like, have a, you know, have them, you know, get back together. And the story's like, you know, kind of like MVP was right, I guess, without making Lashley look like,
yeah,
you know, he should lose to MVP. But I feel like it one thing, like, Lashley came to his senses and decided to, you know, to get MVP back. And I have another question.
Yeah, what do you think, Travis?
That's actually not bad. I mean, yeah, it brings that story if you're not, especially because they're going back every other month. I hear, oh, Hurt Business is about to get back together. Oh, man, Hurt Business isn't going to get back together. Hurt Business is looking to be scheduled for a return. Hurt Business, we've gotten word that isn't in the plans to reunite them. So having at least Lashley with MVP would work for me. That's a story that, you know, would have come full circle a bit if you, again, if you're following that closely. Yeah.
I just say pick a lane for Lashley and really go all in with it. I mean, if you're a WWE fan who has, if you had like a panel of like 9 WWE fans who watch WWE occasionally, but not at the same time, they would all give completely different answers to who is Bobby Lashley and what does he stand for and how do you feel about him? Because it's like, it just changes so much with him. And so just, you know, pick something and stick with it. Don't, you know, don't make him one of those guys who you just don't even know who he is anymore because they turn him so much based on the context of who needs an opponent right now that he can have a good match with. And there's just been too much of that with him. But wherever they go, he can work as a baby face standing up to heels and fans will cheer him. He can be an arrogant, you know, suit wearing I'm better than you with a manager heel, all kinds of things. But just pick one and give us like 18 months of it without interruption. LaMarcus, what else?
Yeah, one more thing. Well, it's not really WWE related, but you mentioned something a few weeks ago that I don't think I thought about when you missed, remember when Jungle Boy hit MJ in the back of the head, and you said that's a heel move. And I don't think I ever considered that as a heel move. It may be because, I mean, the point is that babyfaces don't do that, but I never considered it a heel move. And they usually, babyfaces usually turn a person around and do it. So I just thought that was interesting. I never thought about that before. But at the same time, no, Self has that move where he'll turn you around and hit you in the back of the head. And also, Adam Cole, his finisher, you know, hitting those. Me and you at the back of the head. Is it different? I guess is it different if it's in combat,
Do
you consider those heel moves also?
Yeah, if the bell rings, and you're fighting, mm-hmm. and somebody has their back turned to you, either that was it's like a 619. You strategically weaken them and lean them on the top rope, and now you swing around and kick them in the face, or you can hit them from behind. If you have strategically in a fight have someone with their back turned, I mean, that's how people choke people out in UFC. They get behind them and they put them in a sleeper. So yeah, I'm fine with that. I just think in the context of not being in between bell to bell. That's not an honorable way to make a point physically against somebody.
No matter what they say,
including MJF. Yeah.
I was gonna say I agree, but at the same time, I kind of pop for him because I mean, for one, it's MJF, and at the same time, it's like you turn your back against your opponent, so it's kind of like, I feel like not even a heel, but like a veteran wrestler would have done. I feel like Stone Cold, or even if he was like, you know, face or I guess a tweener or Rock would have probably hit him in the back of the head, or again, like I said, maybe would have turned him around and hit that finisher or something. But that's just a thought. But that's all I have. Wait.
I'm sorry, what's the last thing you said, LaMarcus? Were you signing off?
Nothing. No, yes, yeah, that's fine. No.
Oh, I couldn't. So just repeat what you said at the end there. You faded a little bit. What are you throwing to us on?
No, I was just saying. No, I was just saying that, like the when he did the MJF, I popped for it because MJF was heel and you turned your back against your opponent. So I feel like any veteran would have done the same thing, even though if there was a babyface like Rock or Stone Cold would have done something like that. I guess when they're teammates, but yeah, that's my final thought.
Cool. Thanks, LaMarcus. Appreciate the call.
No problem. Thanks.
Yep. Travis, anything you want to add to that?
No, I'm glad I strategically ducked out on most of LaMarcus's calls.
Why?
Just busting his chops. just kind of seemed like that. Hmm?
Is that actually thunder in the background? Like, are we hearing?
Yeah.
That's
cool.
You've
heard, yeah.
Wow. Right, we haven't had many thunderstorms here in Minnesota, and kind of thankful because our puppy is scared of the fireworks, and I don't know he's going to react to thunder. But I want a nice spring thunderstorm. Like, that's part of – and now it's summer. We're just not getting enough. So I'm vicariously enjoying thunder in the background with you. All right. Let's see. We'll go next to Chris in Warner Robins, Georgia. Chris, thanks so much for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, like, you know, high drama as always. Like, you know, it keeps you hooked and everything. I'm totally down for Roman 3 belts, by the way. Nobody's mentioned that yet, and I was, like, wondering. Like, you know, I was hearing that actually the diamonds on the belt are actually blue, so it seems like all the colors on his belt are actually representative of the other two and his new one.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a nice touch if that's a detail they paid attention to, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. It's a nice touch. But I was thinking about, like, Jay's wording and everything. Thing about it is he mentioned one thing that I thought was a tell. He said, I expect that from him. So Jay always expects, like, you know, Roman to kind of put him a sly comment or something like that. And it did start out, I remember the promo that Roman had back when, him saying, like, you know, the tribal chief isn't you. Like, you're not that guy. You know, and all the other stuff he said before about him. So probably Jay's thought process was like, you know what? He said that about me in the past, and now he's just dangling in front of me just to, like, you know, keep me here instead of just bringing me your tribal chief.
Yeah, all of a sudden I am the guy. Oh, yeah. But Roman did say, just not yet, you know, in his part.
This is true. But I do agree with that. Yeah. Like, he probably did get together and say, hey, like, you know, hey, if you can hash it out beforehand, we're going to have a telephone call or whatever, and just said, like, you know, he's probably going to try to pit us against each other, but, like, we're in this together with each other. So I think that's kind of the thought process of him doing it.
He's thinking too deep. They're twins. They just threw a look. They don't need to hash it out beforehand. They had this entire conversation with their eyes and body language in front of all of us in a split second, because that's just, you know, isn't that how twin magic works?
Yeah.
I'm not ruling that out. I mean, they are twins. That should be worth bonus points when it comes to plausibility.
Like, yeah. I agree. Actually, all they have to do is just kind of, like, look at each other like, no, he's trying to pit us against each other. It's like, you know, not super deep or anything, but, like, we really know how he operates.
It'd be fun to get a reverse angle on replay where, you know, Jimmy and Jay next week are, like, sitting around and Sammy's like, so tell me about, you know, were you really upset with Jimmy? And Jay's like, no, look at this we got this other camera angle. Look at this. I gave him a little look and Jimmy gave me a little nod and we just took Roman on a ride before pulling the rug out from under him. And Sammy's like, I loved it. Like, just acknowledge how illogical it was without an explanation.
Illogical. If they're hashing it out, it's same setting. And Sammy asked the same question. Were you really? He's like, yeah, oops, I was. I learned that in the same time everybody else did. I didn't know he won it. But, you know, that's my brother. And I'm sure he had, you know, whatever he's got, however he justifies it in his own head. But I'd rather him say, no, I was hurt in that moment. But I'm not going to let momentary hurt that was clearly being weaponized, like, okay, you think this is like the big gotcha moment. Like, no, I'm being, just like Jimmy just said 2 minutes ago, I'm being used and manipulated. And here we go again. So, yeah, if they're sitting around talking about that. Also, I'd like the Sammy and Kevin's interaction with them to be similar to what Sammy's interaction with Jay was tonight. Just an acknowledgement of, I don't want them to go to, back to, because you can't, I don't think that can be repaired, certainly not in one or two episodes of SmackDown. But their first interaction needed to just be an acknowledgement of, we did what we had to do, and maybe a fist bump or something, and then they just keep it moving. And you slowly maybe build that friendship back, maybe the six-man or, you know, or eight-man tag a few times over the summer. But that's down the line. I don't think Kevin and Sammy should just, especially Sammy, should be like, oh, we're pals now again, right? Now that everything, like, there's got to be reconciliation and, you know. Those
Yeah. All right, yeah, Chris, back to you.
I would love to hear what Solo's thought process is on that. Not too much when they ruin his aura, but, like, I would like to hear him talk about, like, you know, his brothers, because we are his brothers. So, you know, just kind of be like.
Thought process is he's a coward and a scumbag who's trying to position himself, and, you know, with forethought and malice. Not like, oh, I was used and bought along. Like, no, I know what I'm doing, and I'm making the decisions to be a bad guy.
He's so eager to just beat anybody up who he thinks has come up short of Roman Reigns' expectations.
They need to kill with the kowtowing and everything. I'm a tribal chief. Like, all right.
I think that's like that. That is what he is, though. I mean, that's what defines him. Besides,
I guess when he does finally go, listen, Roman, I guess it'll be like, oh, he means business now. So maybe that is a good thing that he always uses his honorific.
Yeah, just the idea of, like, at the first sign of someone betraying Rome, he's like, want me to kill him? I'll kill him. You want me to kill him for you? And Rome's like, no, chill out, but I'm glad you're ready to kill for me. But not yet. Like, we got more cards to play before we have to murder him. Like, I enjoy that. Solo just stoically standing their arms crossed, waiting for the opening. Go, can I kill him? Can I kill that person? Can I destroy them? So, fun stuff. Chris, anything else?
With Roman's betrayals, like, you can see him, like, playing the hurt victim in all of this. Like, everybody betrays me, and I don't betray anybody.
Absolutely. He better play the victim and be the sociopath that we all know him to be. Yeah. Yeah. Need that.
Yeah. Chris, anything else?
Let me see if I can pop him. Pretty deadly. Do you think them, like, getting thrust into a tag team match so early, do you think that's kind of a good tell for them to maybe be fast tracked to the titles, or more of like a placeholder?
Boy, it could go either way. I wish they established them more first and, you know, gave them a month or two of wins and in a win over a feud with another team that had a little more substance to it, and then, you know, they're like, hey, should we turn our attention to the tag titles? They would look good on, you know, whatever. Tell your story about why they want to be tag champs. This feels a little rushed. I'll take this over them just doing 50-50 book, you know, being 50-50 booked, wins-loss for 4 months, and they're defined down, and then suddenly they're thrust into the title picture. This is the second-best scenario, but I'd rather they established themselves credibly first for a while and also got their characters over more. Travis?
Yeah, I agree. They should have done more than just draft them and then do Pretty Deadly's coming to SmackDown next week with a picture of them. Like, no kind of, like, I don't remember, like, an extended video package of what they did in NXT, because they essentially bought the exact same gimmick and to the main roster. So they didn't have to worry about the Cameron Grimes thing where, oh, well, he's kind of a different character. We don't want to draw too much attention to the hat and the stupid catchphrase or whatever when we show the vignette or when we show video packages. But Pretty Deadly, same outfit, same silly shirts, same hair, everything. So to not, at least in that kind of a token way, just put together a 90-second video package for them, But they did let him, they did have him interacting with, you know, Sammy and Kevin a couple of times. So it, story-wise, you know, there's something to it.
It's compressed, but not non-existent.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
But some more fleshing him, getting their characters kind of just on TV, getting their faces seen, getting their catchphrase. I mean, they're running off their shtick tonight, and I like it, but the crowd just doesn't know, because a lot of them, it's the first time they're hearing what they do, their whole gimmick, and how they're the tastiest snacks, and yes, boy, and all that.
So I'm enjoying Wade Barrett. I'm enjoying Wade Barrett.
Wade Barrett is awesome when they're out there.
He is.
Oh,
he's the woke heel who's giving Cole a hard time over stances Cole isn't even taking. And then Cole has to be like, I didn't say anything negative about them. And the whole masculinity thing and playing on Cole being insecure. And, you know, it's just he's kind of gaslighting him a little bit. But it's fun. Wade Barrett giving Cole a hard time is fun. And Wade Barrett being all for these guys who seem like they would, you know, at first glance be somebody who he would scoff at is fun playing against perhaps expectations. What do you think, Josh?
No, yeah, I agree. Wade Barrett is a gem when Pretty Deadly's on TV, and I think that it goes back to maybe they just showed up. You know, I think he's called them before, like and talked about them when he was NXT commentator.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's Europeans, and I'm sure there's something, you know, like get your continental brothers over. I don't know. Is that the thing?
I bet it is. Probably.
Well, apparently Alba Fire, though, one of them, or maybe it was Isla Dawn, talked about how there's a pretty much all Scott, not Discord, WhatsApp, I guess, group chat.
Yeah.
Is all the Scottish talent. Like, yeah, there's enough of us that we all have like a private little chat called Freedom that we play off of, you know, the movie. Braveheart. Yeah.
Cool. Chris, anything else for us?
With Money in the Bank, with Bayley going in, do you think she's going to lose her spot?
Good question. By the way, I'm glad Bayley didn't voluntarily put her spot on the line, but the fact that, like, Io Sky's like, yeah, she'll do it, it's like, if I'm Bayley's, like, confidant, I'd be like, Bayley, you can say she doesn't speak for me, and no, like it is not a valid contract just because the guy says it. Now I understand, you know, pride's on the line, and she did say you're beneath me, and so now she doesn't want to back out. No. Sky accepting, but there is a little bit of like.
There's more to it. There's another layer. Yeah, it's that once or at least once, but probably two or three times in the last few months, Bayley has volunteered EO for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look like, wait, what? Or accept on behalf of, we accept a tag title shot. And Io's like, I'm trying to go after the women's title. Here you are volunteering me for a tag title shot, derailing my whole thing. So there was more layers to the Io volunteering Bayley. And then to throw her own words back in her face, I'm just trying to help.
Oh, no, I thought it was well done. I'm not saying I'm being facetious, but I'm sort of like, Bayley, like, I'm just thinking, if from Bayley's perspective, just because Io said yes doesn't mean you actually have to abide by that. That just, technicality-wise,
for sure.
You know, Bayley doesn't have to be frozen and go, well, I guess there's nothing I can do about it.
Right, and the fact that Shotzi's go, oh, I'm going to go to Pierce and make it official, as if Adam Pearce can just, he's just going to take Shotzi's word, like, hey, Bayley agreed to a match with me. I mean, he might go, oh, okay, let me just go confirm that with Bayley, because that's how things work in real life, you know, just take people's word. Yeah, Roman Reigns agreed for a championship match with me tonight in the main event. Can you make that official? Like, why doesn't somebody just do that?
Well, I would hope Adam can call – I hope Adam Pierce can call the production truck and go, Shotzi just said this. Is it true? I was on a phone call. And then someone says, yeah. And he goes, okay, good. Like, I would hope he has a way to verify what's happening live on TV if he missed it.
Yeah.
Let's pretend that happens. Chris, any closing words for you?
I'm sorry. Can I ask one more thing about EO? If they're going to – if you hear they have big plans in store for EO Sky, and I really hope that's the case. But I thought tonight would have been a perfect – especially for what they did with her volunteer and Bayley, the way she treated – who'd she wrestle? Was it Zelina Vega? No. Mm-hmm. Was it? Well, yes, Delaney comes out, offers a handshake. It would have been nice for Bailey to be outside. Don't shake her hand. Spit in her face. And then EO's like, well, no, I'm not going to. Like, hey, have a good match. Like, you know, for her to click, like, not heal it up as much, if that's the like some kind of sign that that they are going to split. But that damage control stuff has gotten with the injuries. I think whatever they did have in motion probably obviously got disrupted with Dakota going down.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, yeah. Any closing words, Chris?
Nah, guys. Just like, you know, just looking to see what happens next, and like, you know, go BFE.
Awesome. Thank you. PWTorch.com/goVIP for full details. You can sign up through Patreon. You can upgrade within the Apple Podcast app if you search PW Torch and subscribe to the charcoal gray logo, the PW Torch VIP logo. You can use your Apple account to get all our VIP shows throughout the week. And, of course, you can just sign up through our main website with PayPal or debit or credit card and gain access to the full library of our 35-plus-year history of wrestling coverage. All right. Up next, we'll go to Jay in Michigan. Jay, always good to hear from you. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, good evening, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on, Wade, especially when Travis is on. I feel like I haven't been calling in as much lately, but it seems like I've seemingly caught Travis every time that I call in. So, you know, I'm happy about that, man. I'm always excited to
be
on with you guys.
Of what? I don't know.
I kind of, you know, you guys have been bringing up some excellent points, man. And Wade, I really want to piggyback off what you said as far as the swerve, and this is just nitpicking, but the swerve for swerve's sake seems to just be a well that wrestling has gone to so frequently and so often. And I guess, man, I feel like the bloodline is kind of supposed to be above these shenanigans, if you will.
Typical wrestling tropes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, yeah. So, you know, like, I'm in agreement with you. And here's one thing. I have a question. So, you know, I'm a bit confused as to why Jay from last week, and then he reiterated again this week, like, why he's been so animate that if he's in the bloodline, Paul is out. Like, what has Paul done so inherently wrong to Jay? He started that last week and he stuck with it this week, like him or me. Like, I haven't seen anything that Paul did so wrong. And then I guess I'll get this other point out, and I'll let both you guys sort of, you know, break these two things down. The whole thing about Jimmy not, you know, being in agreements with Ron or Jay being the right-hand man, like, again, where did this come from a standpoint of, like, now when Jay, you know, kind of fell into that role, it was during the time when Jimmy was hurt. And when Jimmy came back, he was more or less against Jay just being Roman's, you know, B-I-T-C-H.
Toady.
And Jimmy may, you know, planted his feet in the sand as not being that. So, you know, I think that it was pretty, you know, it was pretty straightforward as to where Jimmy stood on that. So, like, why is it all of a sudden this big, you know, behind-the-scenes secret that Jimmy didn't want Jay to be the right-hand man? And, like, when did these conversations take place? You know, because we've seen the transition from Jimmy going to, from Jay going to, you know, Usos to right-hand man while he was out to main event Jay. And then Jimmy coming back and stating where he stood on that. But there was never any, you know, discourse or anything that ever really followed that up. So I'm like, it's like they just kind of, I don't know if they skipping steps or just rushing this thing. Not really rushing it, but what do you guys think about that, I guess?
They needed something that they, because they were talking about 3 years, you know, as a storyline. So they said, we need something that we can go back to from 3 years ago, but they reframed it as if that was kind of why about my point with Jimmy being so in the moment, like might have been hurt that here we are on TV and this is getting, you know, thrown in my face and now everybody knows. But everybody already knew. It was an entire storyline about Jimmy's coming back and he's trying to get you away from Roman. And then the storyline was not only did he fail, you wrangled him into the situation and, you know, everybody grew from there. But yeah, that's kind of why I reacted the way I did. Like, well, this wasn't a big secret, but it's more, why did they think that was something that, but maybe they needed it to be weak enough for you get the initial, ooh, but then once you think about it a little more, you go, oh, that really was a reach from Roman to think that was going to do it. And again, if all these points are hit in a promo, or you know, the Usos talking, you know, in the backstage thing next week, I'll be very satisfied that they're acknowledging that some stuff didn't exactly fit, or I've made fans think about it or have to interpret things in a way that, you know.
You want to show people things, not explain things to people in general whenever possible. Expository scenes are made fun of. But I'm ready for an expository scene about what we saw tonight and Jay's whole thinking process. And frankly, I wanted more of that from Sammy after he made his choice too, just, you know, fill in a little blanks. I think because of the pro wrestling structure, there's a feeling of, we don't need to get bogged down to that. I mean, yes, we're talking about we deserve Emmys, and this is the best storyline in pro wrestling history with the best faction, and we've raced the game, and we're drawing record crowds for SmackDown in all these cities and breaking records. So, you know, things are going well. I don't think we need to hold ourselves to the highest of standards with consistency or explaining every detail, but I will still crave that, and I still just don't quite – I can't – it's not just self-evident to me that the predominant reason Jay went on this ride of yelling at his brother and giving Roman and Heyman and Solo the idea that he was going to stay, choose them, I don't know how that benefited him other than it made for more dramatic TV. And I don't think it's good for wrestlers to do things that make for dramatic TV any more than I like baby faces who posture and play to the crowd and then it backfires because they didn't just seize their chance to win a match. Like,
Carl Anderson tonight?
Yes. Someone else did it too. A couple baby.
But at least he paid for his transgressions in a severe way by losing the match. Like, he didn't do it and get away with it. And you go, well, why did Babyface turn his back and, you know, play to the crowd in a moment where he had the guy, or certainly, you know, shouldn't have turned his back. But he paid for it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other instance where it happened. Maybe that was what I'm thinking of. But either way, I think wrestlers should not be wasting effort for the sake of creating a more dramatic experience for the viewers. I think what's most engrossing and believable for viewers is when everything feels real because people are acting naturally within the circumstances and smartly. You know, when it comes to baby faces playing to the crowd, you know, I just go to the James Storm, Robert Roode thing, beer money. And then they could have won, but now they're going to lose because their opponent's recovered. That stuff's just dumb. And Sammy Guevara does. I mean, tons of people do it. I don't want to, well, I just singled out like three people, but a lot of people do it. Just make sure everyone's acting in a way that's natural. That feels like if this is real life and a camera just happened to be here filming it, it makes sense. As opposed to, I'm going to do something to entertain the audience for no good reason otherwise, because it'll be more dramatic when I turn. The stakes were too high for Jay to do that and play that game. But I'm open to looking at it a different way. I mean, that's my initial reaction. And I don't think it's going to ruin anything or set them back. It's just sort of like I said at the top, a little bit of an eye roll that let's not go to that trope that's been overdone. You're above that. Bloodline storyline should be above that. It hasn't been so far. They've done it before, you know, with the Jay Sammy hug, for instance. So anyway, Heyman, JS von Heyman. I think Heyman has been enough of a manipulative snake and also just sort of like this, like, pathetic, needy.
He said, "I love you, my tribal chief."
Yes. The groveling. Today. The groveling. Like, to me, Jay is like, that is an, I am fine. I will consider joining the bloodline to be the tribal chief because you are tempting me. But I will not belong to a club that would also have Paul Heyman.
Roman's response to it was fine. I was like,
he's my tribal chief. When you're tribal chief, you can have your own tribal chief. He's not the tribal chief of Bloodline.
Or your own wise man.
I mean wise man. Sorry. Yeah. He's this tribal chief's wise man. You can have your own. He wasn't throwing Heyman under the bus. He was just going, Heyman, you're my guy to the end. But I'm not bargaining you. You're not a bargaining chip. And it made Roman more admirable in a way. I mean, even though Heyman is this groveling, you know, pathetic sycophant, but he is Roman is loyal to him. But there's going to be that moment, in whenever it is, 1, 2, 3 years from now, where Roman turns on Heyman, and hopefully it's not a swerve angle. Please, can we agree to that? And when he gives Heyman a look and says, I'm done with you," and Heyman just like and then you know. Then Heyman goes and manages someone else and tries to take down Reigns. That'll be fun. That's a ways off. All right, Jay, any follow-up to what our response to what you brought up or anything else?
Yes. So another – I guess, man, my only follow-up is just Jay, you know, the dramatic nature of, like, him – like you said, Travis, they kind of, like, just – rewrote the story that we all saw play out. Like, all of a sudden Jay had no idea that, you know, none of this happened, and it was just some secret closed doors meeting that took place that Jay was not privy to. But, you know, I'm in agreement with you as far as Wade, that is, just with, like, I guess they just kind of had to move some things around for pro wrestling sakes. But I will go to this next point I wanted to make, and it's also something that you had said, and it's kind of something that I have been thinking myself. So I wasn't so dead set on the fact that Cody had to be the one to beat Roman at WrestleMania, but it just seemed like it was kind of trending toward it being the moment where it was going to happen. Now, with that being said, I do think the story is in place for it to basically be told yet again that, you know, now that we've gotten the bloodline out of the way, you know, Roman can beat Cody one-on-one. I get that. But in the meantime, if we're trying to get there, with the 3-year story arc that has been in place with Jay, I think that we're leading to a match with Jay and Roman at SummerSlam. So my thing is this. I felt like if you have Roman, I think a lot of people are on the side that Roman has to have a title in order for this story to continue on or whatever. But I felt like, Wade, you mentioned this earlier in the show, like they put the emphasis on being the next tribal chief, which is exactly what I thought that they would do post-Roman losing the title. So if you're not going to have Jay beat him for the title, which I don't think is going to happen, what is the point to put Jay in another title situation and have him lose again? And then, like, what do you do with Jay at that point? At some point, Jay needs to be Roman. So if you take the title off of Roman, then you go for who's going to be the next tribal chief, because now it's not about, you know, Roman, you don't got the title no more, so you're not the tribal chief. Well, I'm still the tribal chief. I'm still the head of the table. Well, let's see. Like, then you can tell that story, but, like, if you're going to tell this Jay being the next tribal chief story, and then you're not going to have him beat Roman for the title, because I don't see that happening, what do you do with Jay at that point?
Yeah, I mean, do you think they're looking that far ahead, and is there something for Jay after Travis?
Yeah, I think the next tribal chief stuff is just the – I don't think that's something that's – I don't think if and when Jey Uso wins the WWE Championship, he's going to call himself the new tribal chief. I think that's just something to make their feud personal and to add something to it. I don't think much about the whole new tribal chief thing other than...
Well, can I cut in real quick, Travis?
Yeah, please.
So the reason why I'm saying that is because if you remember, the whole thing started with the head of the table. Like, Jay was, you know, battling Roman, you know, like he wanted him to fall in line and acknowledge him. And there was a very pivotal moment where Jay said, why can't I be the head of the table? Why can't I be the one that provides for the family? So the reason why I say that I'm not even looking at it like
Jay has to win the title to be the head of the table or to be the tribal chief. What I'm saying is they've made it about Jay. I just feel like all of this has always been a build-up for Jay being the tribal chief, Jay being the next head of the table. And if you if you're not going – if you're going to like, if you remove the title from it, they can still battle over who's the tribal chief. Like, I don't even think the title matters as much, even though it does matter. But I think that you can still – I guess what I'm saying is I think you could have still told that story just as well without the title being involved, because now if you're going to tell the story with the title being involved, then you're not going to have Jay win it. Then what are you going to do it for the third time, come back around? Because I think that it has to end, in my opinion, with Jay overtaking Roman as the head of the table.
I'm for that. I am intrigued by it. The ride that they can take us on, and what Jay has shown in terms of his acting nuance and range. I mean, I'll sign up for that, Travis. I mean, they have the conundrum. They want to finish Cody's story, but Jay needs to be the tribal chief. So maybe Cody becomes champ, but they are conditioning us to realize that there's more after Roman loses the belt, which is the succession of who the tribal chief is. Travis.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, framing it in a way of Jay taking over and becoming the new anything but the WWE champion when you're like the new tribal chief or head of the I just think that's just that would never get over. Like, you can't, like, that's Roman's thing. Like, now you're just using those catchphrases, and
he makes it his own. But I mean, Jay is showing such acting ability.
Right. I'm just saying, when has a successful gimmick baton ever been handed over? That just doesn't work. The head of the table is Roman Reigns. And when he's not the head of the table anymore, that gimmick is over until they revive it in 20 years for Roman Reigns' son or something. Are they going to come and put a lei around his neck, and Afa and Seeker are going to show up and do this?
Hey, yeah, we had Steve Allen, Jack Parr, Johnny Carson, Jay Leno. I mean, it's not pro wrestling, but, like, I've just thought of the Tonight Show. Like, there's been people who have been very identified with that host chair on a franchise like a talk show, and they've passed the baton, and it's worked out. We've seen it with nightly newscasts when those were, like, you know, how people got their information primarily. Whatever. I mean, there's been action stars in movies who, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger got replaced, and Dwayne Johnson will be replaced.
How has Undertaker's heir apparent gone?
Well, I mean, that's not a thing that needs an heir apparent, but they're laying. If they had laid a foundation for 8 years about who his heir apparent's going to be, maybe it could work. But I think being head of a table in a family faction
dynamic kind of deal
is you can tell that story. And by the way, just because something hasn't been done doesn't mean it can't be done with planning, with forethought, and good.
I'm just thinking of how fans accept things and how fans take things, and fans would accept another head of the table that isn't Roman Reigns. Like, no, that's his thing. Like, why are you biting off? Well, come up with your own gimmick. Like, they would frame it in those terms. Like, smart or dumb fan, they would frame it like, hey, why don't you get your own gimmick, pal?
Jay, anything else you want to add before we go?
Yeah, I kind of think you're missing the boat on what me and Wade are saying. Like, it's not to say that he becomes Roman Reigns. I think that, to me, the head of the table is like the spirit of their family. Like, their family is a well-known
wrestling family.
You're
setting that man up for failure is all I'm saying. He's not Roman Reigns. He would not live up to that moniker. And you would just be setting him up, and fans would not.
That premise, I'm agreeing. That's why I'm saying I don't think he should take the title from him. But what I'm saying is there's more to the story that can be told in a parallel, you know, universe
where Roman is no longer the champion. You know, like, I think that there's more to the story that can be told. And I think that, you know, at one point I kind of ultimately thought that there would be a swerve in the sense of, like, you know, Jay sort of takes over the bloodline and Roman gets ousted, and that's how you get Roman into a babyface role, you know, down the road, because he was, you know, basically like the family turned on him. And, you know, you build the sympathy, you know, Paul goes with, you know, I think another thing that you guys were mentioning, man, was Solo. Like, I think, you know, the reason why Solo doesn't say Roman's name is because I believe Solo is just loyal to whomever the tribal chief is. So if there becomes a new tribal chief, then Solo will become loyal to that role. So I could have seen a, you know, I do believe, obviously, Roman, the ultimate goal is to get him to be a mega star babyface. So I saw that as a way that you can potentially get to that role. But I'm not saying they become Roman. I'm just saying that's another story that you can tell from out of this bloodline thing.
Yeah. Cool. Jay, I want to be fair to other callers who've been on hold and our show's running long. Any quick closing word from you?
Yeah, man, real quick, Wade. So I just wanted you to know I purchased tickets to SummerSlam last weekend, and I was trying to see, you know, is it any support I can lend to any show since I will be there live? Is there any participation I can have on anything?
Oh, Greg Parks would love to have you on Wrestling Latin America on the SummerSlam post show, the live post show, for sure.
I would love to do it.
Yeah, drop us an email and we'll work it out. I know we got a little ways to go, but it's coming up.
Okay. So just email email you and let you know this is what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I'll get Greg in touch and we'll work it out.
PW Torch?
No, do Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com.
Got you, man. All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Jay. All right, we'll go to Brad, formerly from New York, next. Brad, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, really quick, I love listening to Jay. He's like the tribal chief of callers here. I mean, he's unbelievable. So really quick, as I'm on hold, I've been on hold a long time. As I'm on hold, I had written on this small chat group on Twitter. I wrote, like, you know, oh, I realized tonight because the lighting was so good in the ring that Roman's belt has – the blue jewels in the middle representing the Universal Championship. I always thought they were black. It kind of incorporates all three belts. And then this guy replies back to me. This guy, Chris, replies back to me, one of the 52 people in the chat or whatever. He writes back, yeah, it all ties together. Amazing. I didn't notice that, or whatever he wrote. And then I hear Chris and Warner Robins, Georgia say, yeah, I learned tonight that the belt has blue stones in it. So I write back, are you, by any chance in the world, are you Chris and Warner Robins? And he's like, yeah, I am. It was so weird, man. Like, out of all the people on Twitter, I'm going back and forth with this guy, and he's on your show. It was so weird. It just happened. So,
Fave show year old.
Yeah, really.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I can't believe it. So now he's following me, and I'm following, I don't know, whatever. But really cool guy. So, you know, Jay did steal a little bit of my thunder. I was also curious on why you know, Paul Heyman, like what Jay had against Paul. I mean, we've seen the sneaky, you know, backstage looks to Jay Uso when he walks away and things like that. But I do think, like, we kind of missed, you know what I'm saying, a little bit of a chapter, like almost like, well, they just kind of fast-forwarded that. Like, I wanted Jay to have that aha moment, like, oh, this guy Paul's a snake. You know what I mean?
I feel that's baked in enough, but I also think it is Jay's way of going, if I come back to the bloodline with all the apprehension that I have, you can prove loyalty to me by getting rid of this scumbag. And let's show that we are it's all about family and not this, you know, wise man meddler who's disingenuous and, by the way, overly loyal to Roman in a way that would make Jay constantly on edge. I think that's baked in enough for me to be satisfied with that. That to go, I got a condition, I know it's going to hurt, but if you really want me that bad, Roman, and this is about family, prove it.
Yeah, but like, my point, like, and I hear you on that, but like, I kind of felt like, in a certain way, I don't want to say compromised Jay's integrity, but sort of, that he was actually willing to stay with someone who he clearly, you know, really has a lot of animosity towards in Roman, or feels like he was wronged by so badly in Roman, just if Paul had stayed. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's, like, a little bit, I don't want to say problematic. It's definitely not problematic, but it's a little weird that, like, almost like that, if that condition was met and Roman said, yeah, Paul, get the hell out of here, like, Jay would have hugged Roman and we would have been all good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that to me was just something I don't know if it should have been thrown in.
Brad, it's a good question. I want to get Travis's take on that, which is, are you able to reconcile that Jay would even consider going back to the bloodline given everything that's happened? Is his character, to me, the explanation that I've given and that I'm okay with, that I'm satisfied with this, I'm content with it, is he really has shown a loyalty to family. That is in his DNA, no pun intended, but maybe pun intended. He that is what has guided his life. He is very family oriented. And despite misgivings, he will stick with family and try to change it from within instead of abandon it. And that's his default mode. And it takes a lot to pull him out of that vortex, out of that realm. And Sammy almost did it, but didn't quite do it. And he's regretted it ever since, or at least I just say he's had mixed feelings ever since. And we've been on that journey with Jay, and we respect, in the narrative structure of pro wrestling, we respect that Jay is loyal even to people that maybe he ought not be loyal to under other circumstances. So that's been where I've been able to reconcile and be at peace with him not just going, yeah, screw the bloodline. You guys are an awful people and I'm a good person. You know, that kind of thing. Travis.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have much to add.
Good. I would like, just from now on, just do that. Well said, Wade. I agree. I'm not going to repeat what you said. I'm not going to disagree. You're brilliant. I'm brilliant. We're thinking the same thing. All right.
Why didn't in his you were the prom king and most likely to succeed, I was waiting for him to say you were the one that got that found a wife in the business or got the hot wife or, you know, but he didn't. No, you know, that could have been another thing Jay said to Jimmy about, you know, all the pros he had and all the advantages and things he had growing up. But, yeah, no, he didn't throw that in. I wonder if that's because she's gone or they just.
One thing I love about the Bloodline storyline is there's no pandering to the internet or the people in chat rooms or the Twitterverse. Like, they're telling a story that's self-contained. It's not pandering. It's not trying to score points with the people who are going to give them feedback instantly on their phones afterwards. They're trying to draw money, and they're trying to tell a great story, and they're aiming for the broadest audience possible, and they're passing up, quote, opportunities to bring real life into it that don't make great sense or would get in the way, and just leaning on things that, if they happen to align with real life, great. Jay and Jimmy are twins. They're all related. Solo's a brother. Of course, bring that into it. But we don't need to bring, like, meta stuff in. I love that they're making that point, that it can that you can be super successful by staying within that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Brad, back to you.
Well, yeah, Travis Wade, to both of kind of what you guys sort of brought up just now, like, I was surprised that he called Jimmy Joshua, which is obviously his real name, because, you know, last week he was calling Roman, or 2 weeks ago, he was calling Roman Joe. And we, you know, we know Roman's Joe, and we know his real name can't possibly be Roman Reigns, you know what I mean? But, when the guy's named Jimmy, right, we're calling him Joshua. I mean,
wait,
I don't know, I was a little surprised he did that.
The way he framed it. Be like your big brother, Joshua. Be like your older brother, Joshua. So I thought he was Joshua.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Either way, your point still stands. It's the whole, like, oh, we're making it feel more real because, oh, listen, they're saying they're shoot names. So they have gone there. And, you know, after Wade saying they haven't pandered. But it isn't. That's just emotion. And you could just say, oh, well, look, they just – that is, sometimes you do need to make something, quote unquote, more real or more hit more home to make it less offensive in a wrestling context. But it's when you do the cheap ones, when it doesn't really matter, is where it gets
problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brad.
Thank you, guys. And really quick, and I promise you, I don't want to take up too much time. I know you guys are getting tired probably, but I really hope we don't see Shotzi win, get Bayley's spot. I mean, I get it. You know, Triple H loves Shotzi. Shotzi has been completely irrelevant. She's lost everything she's done. And now we're going to see Shotzi, who totally was terrible in last year's Money in the Bank, actually dangerous. I remember there was a few times she either almost injured someone with the ladders or whatever. I forget exactly what it was, but we really need her in this match again. Like, we really need that. Like, I thought the dynamic of Bayley versus Io, would be good in this match.
Shotzi had a match with Charlotte Flair between Charlotte coming back, beating Ronda, and WrestleMania. And I remember specifically saying in the group chat, this match was month three trainees kind of stuff. Just the basic blown spots. And the fact that Charlotte missed, I am the line. Well, you know, your dad could have a match with a broomstick or whatever the stupid term is. You obviously cannot carry someone who's very green, literally and figuratively, in the ring. So I think when I was teetering on the I think I hate Charlotte Flair, that match, even though it was primarily Shotzi who was the terrible one, Charlotte couldn't overcome that. She didn't know how to carry this really bad wrestler to a passable match, and it was a bit of an embarrassment.
Brett, anything else?
Yeah, the very last thing I want to say is, and just because LaMarcus brought up AEW, I don't want to bring up AEW, but I do want to bring up something from Raw. Like, with it being Money in the Bank season, and, you know, Cole's, you know, saying, oh, this could change someone's life. This could, you know, this could, you know, tonight when he's talking about with Santos and LA Knight and whatever, you know, this is life-changing and it's Money in the Bank. Like, I think it's such a silly time to have an open challenge for Seth Rollins' championship on Raw. Like, if it's me, I'm saying, all right, screw this open challenge. Or screw the money winning the briefcase. I'm just going to go challenge Seth on Raw right now. That's what I'm going to do. You know what I mean? So, like, I think it's like kind of a silly time to have this open challenge on Monday coming up. But, okay, fine. You know what I mean? It just kind of, like, takes away to me, like, wow, you could win this briefcase and have this shot at this championship that, you know, I get it. You have a little bit of an advantage with the briefcase where you can come in at any time and sneak your way in. But still, man, like, I don't know. I don't love the idea of having open challenges this time of year for this month. But whatever. That's just wanted your thoughts on that really quick. But it was a great show tonight. It really was. A lot of good stuff. And have a good night, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Brad. Yeah. Too many open challenges. It was a question on the fix this week. Yeah, there's too many just open challenges. I mean, it's a vehicle to get from, you know, point A to point B, and they, you know, do it a lot. But, like, a lot of things they do, like, they just lean on it too much. But I don't know. I mean, it's given the context of what happened in the dynamic between them that we covered earlier, Travis. I mean, it's not the most egregious situation. How about you?
No, I don't like the way they're framing Seth Rollins. Oh, he's a workhorse champion. Look, and the night when Triple H unveiled the thing, we're going to have a champion that respects you. Like, what? Like, I get it. Roman's a heel, but good Lord, don't you want to, I think they did a great job the last 3 years conditioning the fans that the champion isn't around all the time because he shouldn't be around all the time, that the champion isn't on every major show because he shouldn't be on even every major show. And then to turn around and pretend that's a bad thing, you know, and framing it because Roman's a heel, like, no, every champion should be treated like that. Every champion should be over enough that if he shows up on TV once a month, you feel like, oh wow, we got to see Roman this week. Or, you know, just I feel seen or whatever. So this whole workhorse champion stuff, it's just drawing attention to something that doesn't need attention drawn to.
Like, Seth Rollins should now be featured less. He should be taking pride in being at every show, wrestling on every... Why would... And at this point, he's got to be in the other half of his 30s. Why would Seth Rollins want to wrestle on every goddamn Monday Night Raw? He'd be an idiot to want to do that. Like, for his...
Well, his
kayfabe and not...
Character, I don't know.
Nothing.
No, well, his character knows that he's getting a title that was created out of thin air, and Roman Reigns has this really prestigious title reign, but Roman doesn't defend it very often, and he wants
that's why
to
prestigious
have a ledge. Well, yeah. So, I mean, I'm just getting inside Seth's head. He said, how do I differentiate myself? How do I make this title feel more legitimate, or at least, you know, an alternative type of legitimacy? Well, it's not going to come from being on a show seen by 800,000 fewer people every week for a title with no lineage or fake lineage. It has to be something else. And I think that his character is cognizant of that and addressing it and going, I'm going to defend all over the place. NXT, Smack, you know, whoever, where, bring them on, bring anybody on.
No, it just to me makes me go, oh, well, yeah, you got to show up on every show because, you know, you don't have the power not to. Roman's clearly the bigger star. And they even tell you that. Roman pulled some strings. And he could do this, he could do that. And then turn around and pretend that, I don't know. I don't like that part of things. Yeah.
All right. So we'll go next to Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, thanks for holding so long. What is on your mind about SmackDown and our conversation about it so far?
Yeah, well, again, Wade, it's always a pleasure, Travis. You're the man, as always. And, you know, people, go VIP. Everybody said it. The callers have been great tonight. I don't want to harp on too much. I know you guys have brought up a lot, so I'm going to try to go a little bit different. But I did want to bring up that, Wade, I was with you. When Jay, when the end happened, I thought the same thing you did. Travis, I'm sorry. The swerves is stupid. I don't like swerves. Yeah, I got a pop. It was good. I'm still invested. Again, you know, everything you guys said was perfectly valid. There's so much to the story. You know, I want to see where they go next. But just when Jay was saying all the stuff to Jimmy, just swerve and do that. I was like, yeah, it just kind of took me out of it. After a minute of thinking about it, it's like, okay, why did he do that again? But the things you said, Travis, were very valid too. And it's like, okay, you know, I get it, but I wouldn't have done it the way they did it. But I had a question. I actually wanted to go to Baron Corbin. We haven't talked about Baron tonight. I wanted to ask you about him because he's been going back to NXT, which if you guys listen to Todd, I'm with him a lot on this. I just think him going to NXT, and especially Tuesday, he beat Ilya Dragunov. I just think that's not good because I think Dragunov is an up-and-coming talent. And so you go there, you beat him, you attack Carmelo Hayes, you know, supposedly a threat to him. And then he's coming up and losing on, you know, the main roster, you know, to Cameron Grimes in a minute and all this random stuff he's doing on the main roster right now just feels unimportant. What do you guys think about that? Because I just haven't liked what they're doing with Baron Corbin, especially in NXT. On the main roster, it's been fine, but when you go to NXT and start beating the people he's been beating, I think it hurts. I think it hurts a lot of the people that are coming up like Dragunov. It's bad for all of them.
Yeah, you don't want the jobber from one territory becoming the dominant, you know, or a competitive with your main eventers in another. It's happened historically, but not everybody has seen both sides of it. When you're seeing Baron Corbin on a losing streak and then, you know, showing up in NXT and they're treating it like not like Seth arriving to defend the title, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Travis, where are you on Mr. Corbin these days?
I've in the past have been a big fan of Baron Corbin. At times, but right now I'm not. I think there's a way to go about. I think I get what they're trying to do, but doing things like the NXT stuff isn't. I just don't like. He just goes down there. He bullies his way around. He gets attack the champion.
He beat Dragunov.
Channeling Bianca
Belair.
And Dragunov had a match of the year with Walter 3 years ago. I'm with you. I'm not a fan, and I don't even watch current NXT, but that's offensive.
Sean, just keep the pace up since we're over 2 hours. I don't want to rush you. We're on hold a long time, but we might be a little more rapid fire once we get past the 2 hour mark.
Yeah, no, the last question I was going to bring up was a little bit different. I mean, we talked about the Gauntlet match, which was just awful. Wait, I'm with you. It's just awful. I didn't like any of it, other than pretty much winning. But the question I had was, I was just thinking about it, you know, is there any way, I know it's on SmackDown, it's probably not going to happen, is there any way Pretty Deadly could win? Even though I love what Kevin and Sammy are doing with the tag titles, I want them to be important. But I think if you're going to build Pretty Deadly up, even though we haven't seen a lot of their character, we've seen a little bit, and they're at least making strides. But is there any chance they can win? Because I think it would really help if they won the tag titles. I think it would really boost them.
I mean, I have mixed feelings. I mean, I mean, they haven't established on SmackDown credibility. It's been all about their personality and their gimmick and Wade Barrett defending them and you know, their, you know, all the little catchphrases and descriptions of them and all that. But that said, I mean, if it's sort of like Honky Tonk Man was with the IC title, like, I can't believe this guy's champion. And they're just cheating to win. And it's sort of like almost a disgrace to the tag titles. But that's one approach you can take. The other you can take is don't judge a book by the cover. They are provocative and flamboyant and gender bending or whatever phrases they want to use over and over again ad nauseum. But they also are really good. They're young and they're good athletes and they have a serious side and they're determined. You can tell that story too. So I can't like rule it out. But there's something about just KO and Sammy just, you know, going, you know, just defending the titles for all, having a historically significant title reign and take on an array of challengers and have that title reign mean something the way Roman's Universal title reign has meant something. What do you think, Travis?
Yeah, I think they should be determined not to have Sammy and Kevin drop the titles until there's they won them with a compelling story. They should lose them with a compelling story.
Yeah.
Put them against two guys who you think are, if that's Pretty Deadly, then, you know, you think Pretty
make
Deadly could be the future. Yeah. Make it count. Put some real thought into it and maybe a tag title loss to Kevin and, Sammy's start something that ends with them winning at Survivor Series or something like that, whatever.
Very good. Sean, anything else you want to bring up? I know we covered probably a lot of the topics you were thinking of.
Well, no. And that was a good point you just brought up, though, because I do hope, you know, Pretty Deadly does lose. I hope it's they get to have a really, really great match. Because even, okay, yeah, they're going to lose. But in losing, have them have a great performance so you can build them up even in losing, even though, again, it should be about the winner than the loser. But and that's what's hard for me because the tag team titles have been so irrelevant a lot of times, and I want them to mean more, and that's what you guys said. I want them to have Kevin and Sammy to have a long title reign, but if they just keep beating everybody, how does it help another tag team get to the next level? And so that's my only concern. But the only thing I was going to bring up, too, just real quick about the Charlotte is Wade, I know you brought this up a long time ago, and it does really bug me. You know, Charlotte is still getting people to let her in the ring, and I still hate that. I like, stop if she's going to be a face, like, stop doing that. And Grayson Waller, I'm with you. They need to do more. Travis, I mean, you were talking about it. They need to do more with Grayson. If they're going to bring him up, they need to do more than what they're doing right now with him. I just think it's not enough. You do something better than have him have an interview with somebody and then just him sit there in the background. I just don't think that's helping him or anybody really involved. But that's really all I had, Wade. I'm excited to hear what Todd thinks for next week. The Fix is going to be very fun and Collision is going to be fun. Travis, I appreciate you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call as always.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. I want to remember the two things Sean brought up because otherwise I have to bring them back on and review it. So as far as Charlotte, I was going to ask Sean, who let Charlotte in the ring this week?
It was great.
Who was it, Sean?
Great.
Okay. So my issue is not with people letting Charlotte in the ring. It's with the referees.
Mm-hmm.
opening the ropes for Charlotte.
The attendant or whoever.
Well, I'm actually okay. I'm like less offended by like with all the respect, like practically a lackey, you know, just a stagehand. Oh, you know, let I'm like I can like be okay with that as part of the gimmick, but the referee should not be. That's just crazy. That's like a referee tying Michael Jordan's shoes before the game starts. It's like, no, you don't bow at the feet of somebody who you're supposed to objectively be enforcing rules for. So I thought that was dumb. And so that I've run with. Stagehand, I'm okay with. Grayson, I'm totally fine with. Because I don't think Charlotte's a face or a heel. I just think she's Charlotte. I think I was resistant to that. I don't love it, but I think that's where we are with her. She's just royalty in the women's division. Like me, don't like me, this is who I am. And Grayson is new to the scene, and they played up the idea that he was nervous to interview her, and, you know, kind of like Heyman just kowtowing to Roman and Solo being ready to kill people. Like, people have certain traits, and Grayson might be part of his character. It's just, you know, kind of groveling at the big name guest. It's not what I would do with him. But if that's part of his character, maybe this is a window into that. As far as Grayson goes, just in general, Grayson ought to be he should be getting a chance to be more of an alpha and a stronger personality. LA Knight is over because you feel like LA Knight is just full of bravado and confidence and will talk his way into and out of any situation he's in, and he won't shut up until he gets what he wants, and he does so in a way where you just feel like he just owns the room and owns the space and owns the time he's taking up. And Grayson just hasn't done that. Grayson feels minor. And you can't host a segment and be this love bombastic personality and then come in and just be plowed over and being subservient and nervous. Like, I know you're trying to get Charlotte over, but we're just not far enough into Grayson being established for that to be good for him. Travis, any thoughts?
No, I mean, I said what I thought earlier. I thought it was okay for this one because of the interview.
All right, cool. We'll bring Kyle onto the show, and then we'll close with Javier. Kyle from Baltimore, welcome. What are your thoughts on SmackDown tonight?
Yes, LA is the brand, the EL Bailey developments of them being to break it up soon, and the potential, you know, of EO being a baby face, and that's where the goal is leading to. So just what you think about thoughts on that, and you think when you think this blow up between them two is going to happen? Will it happen at Money in the Bank, probably?
It could happen if Bailey loses her slot, which, I mean, I hope she doesn't. I think it weakens Money in the Bank, but I don't know. I think there's a story that they could tell in the Bailey EO match where that happens too. I'm not super locked in on when it happens. Travis, do you have any thoughts on that timeline?
No, and as I said earlier, this thing's been probably pushed back and readjusted because of the Dakota injury. If they were to break up at Money in the Bank, I get that you want to have that match at SummerSlam, but I'd wait and not immediately, a month later. But I guess, I don't know. When's Money in the Bank? It's the July 4th weekend, right?
Yeah, I think 2 weeks from Sunday.
Yeah, So SummerSlam is usually now in the middle of August. So I guess it's 6 weeks later. I think they should hold off.
Yeah, SummerSlam's August 5th and Money in the Bank. July 1st. So, yeah, they moved it to early August.
Oh, sir. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a little early. Just you can get more out of that if you just build it up more on TV. I don't know, 4 weeks is enough.
What else, Kyle?
Yeah, I was just thinking because of that, because I thought, like, you know, you could have that match. You could also have Charlotte and Asuka, I don't know. That's another thing, too. But, I'll get to that in a second with this Bianca thing. I'm kind of glad that she's now starting to show, I don't think heel stuff, but just more of an edge to her character, which she needed. So I'm happy she has that now. And I'm just intrigued what they're going to do with, you know, it's what they kind of going to plan to put Asuka in this dynamic now, because she feels like an afterthought in some ways, because this is not really about her, it's about Charlotte and Bianca right now. So what do you think, where, how could Asuka fit in, or because she'll feel like a third wheel?
So, I mean, she's a third wheel in the storyline, but she's the champion, and she's becoming a bit of a legacy star in the women's division. She's been around, has a good body of work, and she's not going to be able to cut promos and have the dynamic that Charlotte and Bianca do, and WWE is in a verbal storytelling business in addition to everything else that they do. So to me, this is a creative way to involve her in the main event scene, but not have to lean on her to carry the verbal aspect of it, because there's this other storyline going on that feels natural enough to me that I'm okay with it. How about you, Travis?
Yeah, she's just not going to cut dynamic promos and back and forth. Even if they were okay with her cutting broken English promos, I think she's just way too zany and her delivery and the whole, you know, gyrations and everything, just shaking her shoulders and whole thing. I think that gets old quick. And if she's out there involved in stuff, makes her less, even though we're over the streak Asuka, and, you know, her appeal and her mystique and everything has been broken, regained, broken again at this point, you know, years into her main roster run. But I'm okay with Asuka not being a focal point, even as the champion.
Kyle, any follow-up for us?
So I think when it brings Austin Theory, I know he was the one tonight, but just in terms of, it's just, what are you going to plan to do with Austin Theory as the United States champion? He's just been so cold since WrestleMania. He hasn't been on, he wasn't on tonight. So what are you planning to do with Austin Theory? Because he's just, I think at this point, he should just relinquish the championship as far as I'm concerned. Because I don't know what to do with him. He's doing nothing with him.
Travis, where are you on Austin Theory right now?
I like the guy. I mean, he's more than serviceable. I don't know if he's going to be a star for the next 10 years, but he has the potential. And it's just I don't know. What hurts is having those other championships. The Seth the new world title, and being on the same show as Roman Reigns as the U.S. champion I think he's in a better position than Gunther is on Raw, but they just aren't doing much. Like when he's on and doing stuff, he's, you know, having killer matches and he's cutting good enough promos.
But it feels like I see Gunther more on Raw though than Theory does. So I think that's what makes it kind of a little bit different. I see Gunther on TV more than Theory. I know Gunther's not really doing anything really too much as a college champion as well, but at least he's consistently on TV and Theory is. It's not be bad.
Yeah, that's only like the last month. I think Theory was mainstay. He was on every week doing stuff on Raw when he was U.S. champion on Raw and before the draft.
Yeah.
I think the draft is what's has when I think there's been a demarcation of when he, you know, started. Even when he was supposedly being jobbed out, the guy was on TV every week in major segments doing cool stuff on TV with interesting people. When he was getting jobbed out after Vince initially left last summer, which was silly. Now it's when he's not being on TV and it feels like he's being jobbed out because he's not getting to do anything.
Yeah, this is not a time when Theory is a hot topic of conversation with the things that he's doing, but, you know, he's going to be rotated back in. I mean, he's going to get his TV time, even if that's not a priority right now for whatever reason. I don't sense that they're down on him, believe it or not. I appear they're not down on him. I think they're just in no rush and patient, and they have other things filling up the show right now. If you're an Austin Theory fan, I wouldn't be worried. And if you're an Austin Theory critic and thinks he's being overpushed, then, you know, enjoy this time while you can, because he'll be pushed again.
Yeah, I'm a Theory fan. It's just interesting that he's just been – it's just – I do want to see more of him because I do like him. I do want to see what you know, him feeding with other people. But if they don't have nothing planned for him to do, then he's probably not going to be on TV. So what, that's fine. Well, that's why I was mentioning real fast is that, you know, I was really expecting Roman Reigns to come out with the one championship. I mean, they made the belt for a reason, but I heard a lot of people say that he's going to come out with three championships. I didn't think it was going to happen though. So, and I think it's a little bit overkill. I just wish he's coming up with that one championship. They made it for a reason. Just have him with that championship come out with, but whatever.
I agree.
It.
More because don't confuse people, because now people are going to go, wait, so are those championship belts still a thing? Is he really a three-time, a triple champion? No.
No, yeah. Put him in the trophy case somewhere and move. Yeah, he should have one belt representing his championship at this point. Yeah. All right, Kyle. Any closing words from you? Any closing topics?
I'm just really intrigued where they're planning on going with the Usos and Roman Reigns. If they plan on doing the tag match at Money in the Bank and Jey Uso at SummerSlam, and probably even Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa at SummerSlam too, probably as well. That's probably what they'll do. For SummerSlam. So what do you think about that? A Jimmy Uso Solo Sikoa match for SummerSlam while Jay Zaga fight with Roman Reigns, if that's the direction. But I'll leave you with that, just for a call.
Cool, thanks. Yeah, I think that works. Travis, Solo Jimmy, and...
I just feel like you're just doing everything. Everything's happening so fast.
Well, I mean, a month and a half away, SummerSlam. I think you want to have all four of those guys on the show. What's a better way to utilize them?
Yeah, they can be on the show, but you could do that match. You could do one of those matches and then save the other one for something else, for TV.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Like Jimmy and Solo aren't going to add a buy to the pay-per-view, but it certainly promoted with 3 weeks in advance could do something for SmackDown.
Yes, I agree with that. But I also think that there's something about putting your top stars on SummerSlam that builds the SummerSlam brand. And it makes Solo and Jimmy seem like big stars if they are part of SummerSlam. And if they're not, I think it risks diminishing them.
Yeah, I was going to say something earlier about Triple H being able to make simple things seem important with Bianca saying, I'm going to be at ringside for your match for Asuka and Charlotte. Like, here's this small thing that created intrigue. Like, oh, I'm even more interested in that match now since she's going to be there with all this tension. You know, that's pretty volatile. Something's going to happen. But, yeah, selling it as Jay in the corner of Roman, in the corner of Jay, and of course, like if you have Jay versus Roman, of course Solo's going to be there, and it would be almost, you know, it would just be silly strategy wise for Jay not to be there with Jimmy. But if he's had a match earlier with Solo, I mean, you could still do that. But I'm just saying, your thing about having stars on or all those guys on the show, like, well, no, they're all there. They're just, you know, supporting their charge.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Let's bring Javier on to close out the show. Javier, welcome. We're running so long, I'm not even going to play your jingle.
I figured I also had jokes. well, I mean, and the sad thing is Travis hasn't heard it because I haven't talked to Travis in like well over a year. How's it going, Travis?
It's going. Thanks for asking.
I'm going to go ahead and hit the ground running then. First thing I want to talk about is the Heyman. There is no mystery on the Heyman. There shouldn't be any mystery on the Heyman Jey Uso thing. When Jimmy was called to account for himself, he pointed out in his promo that Reigns has been a bad cousin, and it's due to Heyman's influence. Then the week later, 2 weeks later, I don't know what my timeline is, Sami Zayn was talking to Jey, and he tells Jey that he has no problem, that Sami has no problem with Roman Reigns. He has a problem with the Tribal Chief, and the Tribal Chief has Heyman in his ear that's making him paranoid. So two different people that Jey has close ties to and has reason to, believe their words is basically what has poisoned him in Heyman's mind. So the reason that he was fine going back into the joining hands with Roman Reigns again, as long as Heyman, because he is not there, is because he blamed Heyman for the change in Roman Reigns. So that's that one.
Good detail. Yep.
The second thing, and as far as like what Jimmy did, I agree that Swerve is part of the thing, but I think that's a distant third of what that entire promo is. And I actually was found impressive because there were three major things that promo accomplishes. One of them is the Swerve part, because when I'm watching it, the emotions are going through me is I'm seeing Jey basically, when he's talking about like, you've been a bad brother for this reason, and Roman Reigns has done this stuff. I'm getting a sinking feeling, and I'm assuming the rest of the crowd is, that, oh, my God, is Jey going to side with Roman? We don't want this. I have different reasons, which I'll talk about in the first one. And then, when he basically lays out everything he lays out, then he turns. So from an emotional point, it's a swerve, but you were brought really low, really high, so you got that, you got that emotion. But I think that's a distant third, because the second middle reason is what I found really, which was really interesting. If you had never watched, if you're just walking in today, based on everything that Jey said in his promo, cutting his relationship, talking about his relationship with Jimmy, talking about his relationship with Roman, this were the first time you watched SmackDown, you'll come out of it with a level of understanding who all the characters in this drama is. So this would be like a good stepping in point. So what he was doing was basically laying out a lot of exposition. Where we know, if you've been following it closely, and it could get clunky, like if you watch a movie and then it's like, oh, we're going to have a conversation about the stuff that the characters should already know, but they're obviously only telling you that because, to fill you in on what's going on. So that would be a little bit more clunky part of it. But, it was effective because of the drama kind of like helps you forget about that. But what I thought is the most important thing
and
why...
WWE is like a movie where people are filing in constantly and out constantly over years. Like, it's unfair to hold it to those same standards. And so there is a time for recap or exposition. And there was, a 4 or 5 minute video package at the top of the show also to remind everybody of what the rhythm of everything lately.
Well,
but yeah, go ahead.
And I give them a lot of credit for that, because when I talk about it, when a movie does it, especially nowadays, it's just dry conversation. It's just like, we need to get the thing to do the thing because this is going to happen, and there's no emotion. There's no emotional, between the characters. They're just literally spelling out what the plot is. In this case, he's doing it, as part of the story and the emotional thing. But the real reason I think it was imperative that they did this is because the reason why I had a sinking feeling is because originally when Jimmy does the super kick in Saudi, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to have Jimmy be the protagonist at this point. And I was concerned with that because Jimmy is not a strong moral character. In the Bloodline storyline, he kind of went with like his emotion. He's like a surface level guy. So I'm like, he's not the same kind of hero. Jey is the one who seems to be the more principled one. And then to top that off, it really came across as though Jimmy is being taking Jey for granted. He's the older brother, and stuff that Jey touched upon. You know, and it felt like he was being overprotective and like saying, I'm you know, and like assuming that he's going to fall in line. That was Jimmy. I wasn't, you know, feeling the vibes for that, especially when they started turning the story about, oh, what's Jay's decision going to be? And then, you know, Roman Reigns is obviously the bad guy and he's trying to, you know, pull him in. It made, for me, Jay look really, really weak because, you know, is he going to be following his brother? Is he going to follow, you know, it made him seem like, you know, he'd be crass, like, you know, what's this, you know, whose ass this bitch going to sniff? You know, who is he going to, you know, so it made him look like the smaller one. But by basically laying out his issues with his brother and then laying out the fact that, yeah, Roman Reigns did a lot for him and then making that decision, it allowed him to regain control of the narrative and make him the more important person. And when you look at, like, and I got to give credit to Jimmy because his eyes, the look in his eyes were the look of proud when he made that decision. Because, you know, so I think that the only tweak I would have done for it is that instead of saying, you know, he's out, I'm out too, instead of that, I would, you know, because that was a little bit cute, I would have said, he goes, you know, and you know, Reigns, you've done all this stuff for me, but he's my brother, and then super kick him at that point. You know, I think that would have worked better, yep. You know, to tie that whole thing together. And then the I think I had something else, but I forgot. So yeah, I'll pause for a breath.
Yeah, no, you did well hitting a lot. You did go hit a lot of good points. You've had a couple hours to think about it and construct it after the show, but I'm glad that you did and laid that all out. Travis, what do you think about what Javier has added to the discussion here?
He's made a ton of good valid points. There was one thing I didn't meant to hold on to the thought, but there was one thing you said that I didn't exactly line up with. But you made all compelling points and all sense making points. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they speak for themselves in a way, Javier. The notion of addressing in every chapter the history of Jimmy and the history of Jay and how they're different and how they would act different in different circumstances and account for that is essential for this, the bloodline, every chapter of the bloodline to be an 8, 9, or 10 instead of just a 5, 6, or 7. But I think of a real sense of who they are. And there's a sense of autonomy or agency to the creative process where they can kind of speak for them that when they speak on TV, it feels like proper thought has gone into it. And they're not just showing up and saying, oh, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to do? And I think that was covered in the last, you know, few weeks of these major developments after a little bit of a down period for a while there. So anyway, Javier, back to you for you've gathered your thoughts. You've taken a breath. What else?
Yeah. Now, I remember what I was about to say. Now, what I would like to see in the next week would be Jay take the lead. Because normally when the Usos are together, they're either 50-50 and they do that annoying thing where they're like, you know, finish each other's, you know, sentences and they come across as either 50-50 or it has Jimmy following the lead. I want to see Jimmy take a back seat and have Jay be the leader and be the alpha of that group. And, you know, since the whole idea of he's going to be the next tribal chief, you could play with the idea that, you know, his tribe broke off, which is his brother. And, you know, so it is, you know, in essence, if he takes, you know, becomes an alpha, you know, an alpha between him and Jimmy, you know, in a way he becomes the tribal chief for his splinter group of his family. So I what I'm hoping to see in that respect. The other thing I'm also expecting to see probably, and what I'd like to see is, you know, him go to, Jay go to Sammy and say, you were right, and then challenge him for the titles. Instead of being like in a hatred way, like in a friendly competition sort of way, and then the Usos win back the titles, in a spirited match, but one where it's no shenanigans, no nothing going on, and it's just two teams trying to prove who's better, and then you know have them win the titles, and then you know you could set up a set up for Jimmy and Jay versus Reigns for the and Solo for the titles, and that's mm-hmm. where they would get their comeuppance. Similar, basically the same way that Sammy got his comeuppance. Reigns got his comeuppance at Sammy's hand at Saudi. Reigns could get his comeuppance at the hands of the Usos. Mock is a harsh word, but like I never really bought into, I think it was both Nick Verbiati and I think it might have been Brandon LeClaire, who were like two really vocal, like, you know, Jay's got to be the one to dethrone him. That's the only thing that makes sense. This is the closest I've been where I think that actually might be a possibility, because before it was kind of laughable. I hate to say that word because maybe, but it kind of felt laughable to me, that idea. Yeah, and you're gonna basically, yeah, you're gonna wade this. But this is the closest I felt like it was. But my question is who next? The reason I thought that McIntyre and Cody could defeat Reigns is because I could see, you know, ultimately other people, you know, what's next. The thing about Jay is that the reason that we're really into the Jay stuff, there is a lot of bells and whistles around him. You know, the whole family connection, the legacy connection, the fact that they're twins and you got the personal relationship. There is a lot of story that's blowing this up. If you remove all of that, and, you know, will he be able to basically talk people into, like, you know, because, like, I trust Cody to talk me into watching, you know, paying for a pay-per-view. I don't know if Jay can, you know. So, and since he's, like, the more, you know, reserved of the two brothers, that would be my concern.
Wait,
and why I think that, you know. Yeah.
The more reserved?
Yeah.
I mean, in the whole Sammy, like when Sammy was with the Bloodline, Jimmy was the one that all he was yeet, my dog, fancy handshake, and that was it. And Jay had all the personality and all the stuff because his storyline was about how he was heated.
He was the actual, the spotlight was on him, but what I'm referring to is like when they both have had equal time doing the same thing, he's always been the one to step back. He has stepped forward during a lot of this Bloodline stuff.
I disagree.
But I'm talking about like.
I disagree. I think he's the one.
Cause like
historically, he's main event Jay. It's not main event Jimmy.
I'm talking even before that because he even mentions that in that promo that when his brother, I mean, he actually even says it, that he was able to come out of his brother's shadow when his brother got injured. So he even brings that up himself in the promo. Yeah. So, it's just like, because the way I see them, like if you know what yin yang is, Jimmy is a much more Yang personality, while Jimmy is more of a Yang personality, while Jay is more of a Yin personality.
Okay.
I'm just listening. I cannot speak to Yin or Yang. I understand Travis's reaction, but I understand Javier's longer timeline and evidence, and so I'm just reconciling all of that. I mean, I think they're distinct personalities, but
another way you could put it is, would you consider Jimmy? I would consider Jimmy like a summer spring personality, while Jay, I would consider him more of a fall, winter personality.
No, that doesn't help.
Can you put it in fantasy terms? Is he an unseely fae or is he a seely fae?
we got that too.
We're talking lawful news.
You can kind of tell, like, in the persona of real life, because it always, you know. You hear more about Jimmy getting in trouble than you hear Jay getting in trouble. one thing I forgot to mention remember, Jimmy was out twice. That's why that whole part of it where the question about whether Jimmy did not want him to be the right hand man. It looked like they were going to run that storyline, but remember that Jimmy got a DUI during that period, and then that whatever storyline they were going to run at that point got
right. Yeah.
So he was yeah. So.
Okay.
Javier, anything else?
Well, the only other thing, just because it just always pisses me off when it happens, and this is what was originally the joke about, is I really, really hate it when Hispanic wrestlers cut their promos saying, you know, sentences in Spanish and then repeating it verbatim in English. I just find it patronizing.
Look,
it's
okay, I think, to do your first one or two lines, but the guy just kept going. It was the most disjointed promo because he's going back and forth. The entire promo almost, or 85% of the promo he did in both English and Spanish. I think if you come out and you say your first couple of lines in Spanish and then you switch over to English, or if you go back and forth a few strategic lines, you know, in the promo, totally fine. But every sentence you got to then explain or repeat in English, and I thought that was way too much tonight. That can be done very well and give a shot. And they were in Lexington, Kentucky? Like, I'm like, you guys are running a risk of the crowd going, all right, speaking of English, buddy. You know, like.
Speak American.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you, Javier. But
Lexington.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, generally, I find it irksome. I really dislike it when they do like today. I mean, they haven't done it a lot, and because Damian Priest used to do it all the time.
Ray does it. It's fine. Again, he says his one or two lines.
He just says one or two lines, and then says it. I mean, it's still irksome just because it's pandering. For me, it's pandering. Because I mean, my favorite was the Dominic Mysterio one that he cut basically the entire promo in Spanish because he was saying stuff in that promo that you wouldn't translate well into English. So, you know, and it was like, I was like all in on that.
Because it was vulgar or because his handle on Spanish isn't great?
Well, it's just like the way, you know, like some languages, like it's just like the poeticness of what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah.
Plus he also buried the hell out of his sister in that. So.
Oh, the
I think I'm pretty sure that's all I've got. I don't think there's anything else. And although my favorite thing in the whole Bloodline thing was when Caleb Braxton stops Roman Reigns and Roman Reigns just brushes her off and says, wise man, your girlfriend's here.
Kayla's really good, and Heyman and anyone with Heyman play off of her really well, and that's fun. But Kayla's not like undignified. Like, I like that she's not just like meek and like caves in to these large personalities and physically large men. She's strong and, you know, just keeps coming back and doing her job the way that somebody should. Reigns just kind of blowing her off, walking by when she asked a question was amusing, and Heyman and Kayla have a special chemistry. So that's a lot of fun.
What I liked about that is because the whole girlfriend thing, the Heyman, you know, stop looking at me. That kind of felt like an in thing between them. And the fact that like an outsider comes out and calls them out on it is what I found was funny. Yeah. All right. So.
Cool. Javier. Thanks. Appreciate, especially the whole Bloodline opening rapid fire backstory there. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hopefully tomorrow.
Thanks. Yes, absolutely. So for me to have any energy tomorrow, because this is a new thing, we got to sign off, Travis. Any closing words? Anything you want to? I mean, I'm sure there's segments we didn't talk about, but anything you want to for sure bring up before we sign off here?
No, we hit all the important stuff and more than once, so we're good.
Yep. Sounds good. All right. Thanks, everybody, who stuck with us here to the end. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night after Collision. I haven't gotten to say tomorrow night on a post show, but it'll be tomorrow night. So that'll be interesting. I wonder if CM Punk knows what he's going to say by now. Probably not. Maybe. We'll see. Talk to you.